Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. You know, there's always one thing I forget to do before the show. Today, again, is the air conditioner. So at some point, I'm going to have to run around and grab that. I'm expecting Tara D to call in any second now. We're going to have our pup date, our pet update. We'll see what's going on at the Santa Rosa County Animal Shelter. But just everything's going crazy this week. And not in the way that you think. Yes, Trump got indicted for a third time. Yes, his poll ratings are going to go up. Yes, we know it's a bunch of bogus material. But what you don't know, what is absolutely thrilling for those of us here is the fact that Jack Smith, in his ultimate idiocy, completely opened the door so that we can now prove all the results of the 2020 election being a total fraud. Because he said that Trump knowingly conspired to spread false information about the election being a fraud. Well, the fact is the election's not a fraud. So what's so funny about that is that now in his defense, he gets to prove the election is a fraud. And if the judge says, well, no, you can't do that, well, that becomes suppression of evidence. If the judge says nothing, and of course is what they should do, and they go ahead, then they can prove the election a fraud. That dismisses the charges. So either way, Trump wins. This is the funniest thing. Anyway, we got our pet update, affectionately known around here as the pup date, and I'm going to work on. In fact, I'm going to make a note to myself right now. We need to do Tara D's theme. Everybody gets a theme around here. So Tara D, I got to make you a theme. How you doing?
Okay, sounds good. Good morning. I'm doing good. How are you today?
I'm having a great time. But just to, I'm going to make up a theme for you right now because you're so good at the show and because you had a great person fill in last time. So I've got my America the Beautiful, which I save for occasions like this. So let's do a pet America the Beautiful. There we go.
Okay.
And now presenting one of the latest features of Action Radio, Tara D. Because America is pets and pets are America. Yeah, you can join in too with our patriotic moment.
I like it.
Patriotic pets. Well, I'm going to increase the background just a touch here. Let's see. There we go. No, that's too much. So, aren't pets as much a part of America as everything else, as the people, as the landscape of amber waves of grain and purple mountains majesty and all that? We've got all kinds of pets. We've got herding. We've got hunting. We've got cats that just bring home the mice. We've got all kinds of pets. We've got birds. I thought, what's that? We've got everything here, because this is America. And now a report of America's pets. Nothing that's America.
Very good, very good. I like
Wasn't
it.
Isn't that
like
fun? The things we get up to here, so I'll get you a theme. Maybe I'll get like the see if I can find a non-copyright version of the barking dogs during Christmas. Have you heard the Jingle Bells one?
Yes.
Okay, we won't do that anymore. All right. Seriously,
we could probably come up with that at the shelter. There's a lot of barking going on there as well. So.
Yeah, make me a soundtrack. Actually, if you can send me an MP3, I'll upload it. And so, if you can make your own, you can be the first person. No, actually, no, Bill Fecky is the first to make his own theme. So he made one, which I use. But if you want to make your own theme, that's fine with me. Get a little sound
stuff.
I'm not
creative, so.
Oh, come on. Well, see, now what my audience doesn't know is that Tara and I were kind of talking off the air a little bit. And I think you should do your own pet show. I think you should get on Blog Talk, do once a week. I'm serious. Do an hour. You know, Tara D's Critters.
Well,
or, you know,
yeah, well,
like
I talk
that.
About pets a lot, for sure. That's my one area that, you know, I love talking about dogs and cats, especially, you know, people interested in adopting because we have some great pets at the shelter. So, that is a good, an easy topic. So
get yourself a microphone. Get a Yeti Blue mic. And they're not all blue. They're silver and black and red and all kinds of other colors. I had a red one. I got a blue one now. I actually have a blue Yeti Blue, which is kind of interesting. Get yourself a headset.
Cool.
Headset plugs into the mic. Mic plugs into the computer. Computer plugs into Blog Talk Radio. You're on the air.
Cool.
You could do it. Yeah. So what's going on?
Think about
what's going
it.
On at the shelter?
Sure.
What's going on with you? Yeah.
Well, we have lots of stuff going on at the shelter, as always. We just wrapped up the Bissell Foundation adoption event, which was the last 2 weeks of July. So very excited to say that we adopted out, I think, 101 altogether, cats, kittens,
Dalmatians?
And dogs.
Oh.
No Dalmatians, but maybe
no Dalmatians. You have 101 Dalmatians?
But yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so no Dalmatians. You know, you don't see this too often anymore. Just very once in a while type of thing. But
none
I know they
kind
of went through a popularity, you know, with the movies and such, but we really don't see them often, which is probably good. They're a little more for the experienced owner. They can be a little stubborn. And I don't see them too much. But, yeah, we did really great. We adopted out about 101, and that was a great 2 weeks for us. Lots of kitties found homes, and so that was a great way to end July. Then we started into August with our Clear the Shelter event, which is a national event through Hill Science Diet. And I think it's like NBC, Telemundo are the sponsors. And so that goes on for the month of August. And basically that is just our adoption fees are our normal fees, $25 for dogs, $10 for cats. Mm-hmm. And then also you get a little starter pack. You get some coupons. You get little freebie little giveaways that come with your adoption. So, and then at the end of the month, to tie in with that, we'll have an adoption waived fees, which will be Friday and Saturday, August 25th and 26th. So the adoption fees will be waived at the shelter that weekend. So even though they're already low, then we're going to just kind of do a little adoption event there at the shelter, hoping to get folks in to see the great faces that we have looking for homes. So.
Wow. So just to backtrack a little bit here, the Bissell adoption, who's Bissell? Who are they?
Okay, so Bissell's like, you know, they do the vacuum cleaners.
That's the same company. Okay, that's
products,
right. Yeah.
They're great, great. If you ever want to put your money into something that actually goes back into the animal community, they are amazing. So Kathy Bissell, who is, I guess, part of the Bissell family, they have the Bissell Pet Foundation, which is a charitable organization, and they support animal welfare. So they're always doing a lot of things in the animal welfare community to help our animals in the United States. So they do spay and neuter clinics, they do helping with like cases that need like transport. And so what they've started doing is these quarterly adoption events where it basically allows us to adopt animals out at a lower fee. And our fees are low anyway, but we just do it for $5 during that time. And then they do like a grant submission afterwards. So in addition to helping us get the adoptions up for that period of time, then we also get a grant amount at the end of that once we submit all our paperwork. It's a lot of paperwork, but it gets people in the shelter, which is awesome. And it also helps us to make a little money for the animals at the shelter, so we then put that money back into the Partners for Pet fund, and we can use that for medical or any kind of needs that we have at the shelter. So it's really great. But, you know, that's one of the groups that really does give back to the animal community. If you're thinking about buying I think they make lots of things. I think they do steam cleaners along, you know, all those lines of products, but they really do support the animal community. So
is she around here locally, Kathy Bissell?
No, I think they are outside of California, if I'm not mistaken. So.
Okay. But you talked to her, right?
In a group setting, but actually I've talked to her on the phone before. We actually had I think it was about a year and a half ago, we had a large case and we did a conference call because they actually sponsored a whole adoption event in the state of Florida, an emergency event, so where they basically got other shelters and rescue organizations to support our shelter by pulling animals, and they offered stipends to those shelters in addition to doing an emergency adoption event to help us get our animals out. So we were able at that point to get out 85 animals in a matter of 2 weeks, which allowed us to not have to euthanize anything for space. So super, super sweet lady. And I mean, they do an amazing job. So.
Well, you know where I'm going with this, don't you? I mean, I want to get her on the show.
Oh yeah. You know, we could send an email in and see, you know, never heard to try, but she's super, super nice lady. I know she stays very busy, but they amazing supporters of animal welfare, and just do a lot for animals in our country.
Well, that'd be great. Yeah, and like I said, I'm always looking for people, too. And who knows? They might even want to sponsor Action Radio. So I do have my slate all here.
Yeah, you never know.
You never know, exactly. Telemundo, you mentioned them a minute ago. What was that event?
Mm-hmm.
Who are they? That's Spanish news TV or something, isn't it? Or radio or something?
Yeah, so I don't really, to be honest, I don't know all the details, and I probably should know a little more about that. But I know that, so the Clear the Shelters event has been something that's been going on for years and years, and they just do kind of they kind of brand up some advertising to help people go to local shelters and adopt. And in the past few years, it's gotten a little more media savvy. So now it's sponsored by Hill Science Diet, which is a major animal, animal food manufacturer for local vet, or not local vets, vets everywhere. And then Telemundo is more like a Spanish TV, I guess. And so they have taken on as a sponsor, and then NBC, you know, they're under NBC. So it's gotten a lot bigger as far as the media coverage. So we're hoping that people will see these commercials that will be coming out. I think they're going to have commercials and a lot of social media about it. Just kind of reminding people, like, hey, let's work on peer adopting, go to the shelter. They've got some amazing pets. And the idea is to clear the shelters. Now, we can't say that's really ever happened for us, except for one time that I'm aware of.
Right.
But anytime you adopt some animals out, it's a good day. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'm trying to think. So what's let's – well, actually, what I really have to do, I have to turn my air conditioner off. I forgot to turn it off before the show. it gets a little warm in here, but it also gets noisy. It's very distracting. So I'm going to mute myself for about 30 seconds. And during that 30 seconds, if you could give the contact information, that'll give you something to do, me something to do.
Absolutely.
We won't lose any airtime.
Okay,
and so I'm going to mute myself. So I'll be back in 30 seconds.
Okay, absolutely. So Santa Rosa County Animal Services, we are located at 4451 Pine Forest Road, Milton, Florida. We know that there's a Pensacola Pine Forest, so this is actually located in Milton. You can call us at 850-983-460 or check out our website, santarosa.fl.gov/animals. We've got lots of great information on our website for lost and found dogs. We have adoptable animals on there. We have resources as well, so all kinds of good information on there. And we also have our Facebook page and our Instagram page. You can check those out as well. They have cute pictures and good little clips of information also.
Huh, perfect. I'm back.
Right. Good timing.
Little things. Yeah. See, this is radio. Like I say, you improvise. It's amazing what you can do. Okay, so what's, so who we got for critters this week? Or do you have other issues? Or what, whatever's on your mind is fair game.
Okay, yeah. So we actually did an adoption event, a small event on Tuesday. So Texas Roadhouse in Milton has Dine and Donate Days. So they invited us to do a Dine and Donate. So basically you put your flyer out, you encourage people to go in, and they give 10% of the proceeds to the shelter, which was fantastic. So we had a really good turnout for that. I don't know how much we made, but we'll find that out probably next week or so when they drop off a check to us. But they were like, hey, come up, put some animals out up front if you want as well. So we took a couple dogs out there. It was extremely hot, and the dogs were like, oh, this is terrible. But they got to visit with a lot of people, so we actually took a couple of really nice dogs. So I was able to get a little more information about the two personalities. So we took a dog named Honey, which is a little mixed breed dog, probably pity mix, about 35 pounds or so. Amazing dog. She loved every person she met. She seemed to really like children, and she's adorable, just super sweet and friendly, just didn't meet a stranger. Very, very good dog. So we have Honey, who's adoptable now, and I think she'd do great in a family home. We also have Arevalo, who's one of our dogs that has been there a little longer. She came in with heartworms, so we have treated her for heartworms, which can be very pricey if you do have to do that at your vet, but luckily we have a vet on staff, so we're able to do that at the shelter, which will really help her and, you know, a new adopter. That's a large amount of money to spend. So that's already been taken care of. She's already been spayed, and now she's looking for a good home, and she's a mixed breed dog, probably a little shepherd or something along the lines of her, but she's about five or so. She likes kids. Well, we think she likes kids. We haven't had her in a home with kids.
How do you find that out?
She seems to be pleasant with kids.
Do you have kids on staff? You just
kind
of bring them by the dog?
We had a couple kids come up. Yeah, exactly. That's something we use a joke about because people are like, are they kids? And I'm like, sorry, our two-year-old just quit off the staff, so we really don't know anymore. You know. But this dog is great. She likes other dogs. She likes cats, and she seems to like pretty much everyone. So I think she would make an amazing family pet as well. So those are our two that, you know, I personally just got to spend a little more time with. We also have a wonderful dog in one of the offices named Lady, and she was actually on a case, and she's just been released for adoption. She's an older gal, about, I'd say probably 7 or 8. House trained, quiet. She just kind of likes to lay in her bed and then comes up to you and gets loving, and then she'll go back and lay in her bed. Just a great dog. And so in addition to those three, I mean, we have probably about 70 more dogs that are up for adoption. So
70?
You know.
Wow.
Yeah. If something comes in, something gets adopted, something else comes in. It's every day there's new faces coming through. And so we just try to work on the ones we have there, getting some out, and then we, you know, go to the next round and work on others. As far as cats and kittens, we do have them, but they go very quickly. So since I was out, I really don't know. The only one I know that's been there a little while is a cat named Marley. Marley is fantastic, but Marley has feline leukemia, which is something that could potentially spread to another cat. So for that reason, Marley would need to go to a home with no other cats or with a cat that positive for the virus. So that probably is going to take Marley a little longer to get adopted. But Marley is a beautiful Siamese mix, very friendly and sweet, and looking for a home. So we hope that someone maybe that doesn't have another cat or you're just going to have one cat maybe comes in and falls in love with Marley. So Marley is kind of our cat of the week for that.
Interesting. I was just thinking of a feature we might want to include, like the breed of the week. In other words, you can pick a dog and or a cat and just describe different breeds for people thinking of animals, thinking of which ones they might want to adopt at some point. Because, and especially, you can even do mixed ones. You know, what makes great mixtures?
Oh, yeah.
And we can go through the whole doodle history. That'd be kind of funny.
Oh, my goodness. That's a whole, yeah, that's a whole story. We're seeing a really, really large influx of doodles just in the community, I've noticed. And, you know, they're beautiful dogs, and people pay all this crazy money for them, and then they get them, and they're like, wait a minute, these dogs are super hyper, or, oh, my gosh, the coat. Because if you don't take care of the coat, like, it's a very – you have to stay on top of the coat, or they'll get super matted, and it'll go to their skin, and it can be very painful for the dog. So I think people maybe don't do the research, and they think it's going to be, oh, this will be an easy thing, and the coats are – you know, they just have to – so one thing we try to – just the people is do their research if they're going to get a particular breed because, you know, while there may not be those particular traits every time.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if it's a mixed breed, obviously you can't really research a mixed breed because it could be anything. But if you're looking specifically like, I'm going to get a German Shepherd, get on Google and research German Shepherds, their habits, their exercise routine, their size. You know, make sure to educate yourself so that if you – you know, is this going to be a good fit for my household, for my lifestyle? You know, the last thing you want to do is get a super active dog if you live in an apartment and you're lazy. And there's nothing wrong with being lazy.
Or you're gone all day.
But, you know, like,
yeah.
But if you just like to watch TV all the time and lay on the couch, and you're going to get like a young shepherd, probably not going to be a good idea. So when you want to make sure it's a good fit for your lifestyle, you know, just make sure to educate. People will get herding breeds like a Australian cattle dog, which are super intelligent dogs, but they get them and then they complain because, oh, they nip at the children. Well, they're a herding breed. They're herding your children. That's part of their, you know, DNA basically is to do that. So you have to keep that in mind when you get a breed like that, that these are things that are probably going to occur. So be okay with that. You know, or if you get a 140-pound dog, chances are, if you have a toddler, they might knock the toddler down at some point.
Mm.
So make sure it's a good fit. Like you're okay with, if you're a parent who is going to freak out if your kid gets knocked down, then maybe wait till they're a little older to get a dog that may knock them down. You know, just things like that. So we see people that do a lot of research, and then we see the opposite where they come in and they're like, I want this. And you're like asking them questions and you're like, that's not a good match. So you just try to trying to lead them in a better decision because when we get ours adopted, we don't want them to come back. We want them to have a good fit for the family. So,
yeah, it's one thing if you buy a product, you know, that you don't like, you can take back, you know, it's still under warranty or something like that. But animals are living things, folks. You know, it's a
absolutely.
Very, it's a completely different setup. Do you find that people have like bad or misperceptions of certain breeds or there's like advertising?
Oh, yeah.
You know, people, so what's going on with that?
Yeah, so, you know, and we've battled that the whole many, many years being at the shelter, and we actually were part of that for many years. We did not adopt out any pit bulls or any pit bull mixes. We did not adopt out Rottweilers, Dobermans, and Chows. So those were the breeds that were on our, like, no adopt list. So if they came into the shelter, like, it was basically a death sentence unless you could find a rescue to take them. And so that was a really big thing when we changed that county I don't think it was an ordinance. I think it was just kind of a rule, but we, you know, that was changed. So now, like, we don't do breed restrictions. So any dog based on their behavior can be adopted out, which is amazing. And it makes a huge difference because we can get so many great dogs, and probably at least half of our dogs are bully or bully mixes. And so that allows them the opportunity to be adopted as well. And I know that, you know, if you watch the news, you do see a lot of cases where pit bulls are involved in a lot of things. But as a whole, it's basically, I think a lot of that is circumstantial and environmental, because you put, if you put a dog on a chain and you don't neuter him and you teach him to be a guard dog, then he's going to have a certain behavior. If you put him in a home and you give him love and treat him as part of the family, then, you know, and I'm not saying that's always how it goes, because there are some dogs that are just not wired properly. That does happen on occasion. But as a whole, it's basically if you teach your dog manners and you treat him as part of the family, then he's going to reciprocate by being a good pet. You know, not to say he may not dig in the yard or do things like that, but as a whole, you
dogs.
Know, I think bullies get a really bad rap.
Dog-
yeah.
Yeah, do people
they're
not
do
understand
dog
dogs?
Yeah,
yeah. Do people say if they get a dog and then expect you to, I guess, stand in the corner and just wait, you know, and then nothing will happen? It's like they're living, they're active, they got brains, they, you know.
Yeah.
What was an interesting question? Has anybody done intelligence studies with dogs to find out how intelligent, which breeds are really sharp and which ones can think, problem solve, you know, that kind of stuff? What goes on in their brains? Is that, have you looked into that?
Oh yeah, I'm sure there has been. Like, I don't know any statistics or anything, but I know some of the most intelligent breeds that are, you know, Australian Shepherds and Border Collies. Those guys are just – Australian Shepherds can be a little more, I would say, standoffish as a whole, but the Border Collies, like, they are just so intelligent. The thing with those, they're just always
–
so
why them?
I don't know. They're just – they just are like – and, you know, sometimes we get dogs and you're like, yeah, this dog is going to be smarter probably than whoever adopts him, because he's so smart. You're like, ooh, this can go two ways. It can go really good for the family, or it can go bad, because it's like, do you want the dog, you know, they're going to pull all kinds of, you know, tricks on the family, or just get away with all kinds of things because they're just so intelligent, you know. So it just kind of depends on what you're looking for. Like, of course, German Shepherds are highly intelligent as well, and
right.
they can,
yeah.
you know, it's really neat the difference of the breeds, because sometimes we'll get dogs in, and you're like, this dog is just... he's a goob. He's not smart. But he's a sweet dog. So it's like, does he need to be smart? No, he's cute. He's loving. You know, he can do his
dipstick.
Job of giving love to the family.
Hey, dipstick,
so.
Come here, dipstick. You know, sorry, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
I would,
it's like, come here, give me some love. You know.
Well,
so yeah, they don't have to all be super intelligent. It just depends on what you're looking for in your companion pet. So
well,
yeah,
see,
it just
like
kind of goes down to that.
You know, I hate stupid people. I do. I'm sorry. That's my biggest prejudice. You know, I hate stupid people. I'm sorry. Just don't call my show if you're an idiot, because I'm just going to make fun of you. But if it, animals, same thing. I love intelligent animals. That's why I've always liked parrots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, parrots I've heard described as 2-year-olds, you know, that, you know, with claws, wings, and a loud voice, and they never grow up. So if you want a perpetual 2-year-old, get a parrot. I used to keep them. I don't think it's fair to keep birds in cages anymore. So if I'm going to deal with parrots, I'm going to you know, get myself an island in the Bahamas and have a big, you know, parrot bird feeder, so
parrot
they can just fly in naturally. Yeah. Well, there's a place in Australia that does that. There's a world famous rainbow lorikeet. Do you know rainbow lorikeets, the honey-eating, the nectar-eating birds? The fruit eaters?
Oh, okay. Yes.
Right. Okay. So they're in Australia. They're green and a bunch of red and orange and other things mixed in. They're not the greatest pets because they're totally messy. You know, and they're more social. They like to be. They like to be in the flock. Okay. So they're really a flock bird.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this place in Queensland where this guy in the 1800s, he started feeding them this bread, honey, you know, milk, whatever mixture it was, and he started feeding a few birds. Well, then it became a few more birds. And by the time I went there in 1967 or 68, I think it was. My folks took me to Queensland. You know, I live down in Melbourne, down in Victoria. There are thousands, and they come out every day.
Oh, wow.
It's like the birds, okay? The movie The Birds, the sky literally darkens.
Yeah.
The sky turns green.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
All you hear,
wow.
Oh, no, there are literally thousands. I had at least 20 on me alone, and there were at least maybe 500-600 people in the crowd gathered around this huge football field. And you all, you know, bring your raincoats because you're going to get pooped out.
Oh, wow.
And you hold on. Oh, it's hysterical because you got a plate with a bunch of birds on that. Then you've got the ones on your arms and shoulders and head. And that's each person has about 20 birds and about 600 people. So do the math, you know. And then the ones that are flying around and they're all flying in and out. And they know it because it happens every day. So they're trained, but they're wild. They're wild birds. You know, it's like swimming with the stingrays. They did that too. And they're, of course, they don't train stingrays. But getting back to intelligence.
They can do what they want to.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting. I know there are studies. It'd be a project for you at some point if you're, you know, when you have nothing to do at the shelter, if you have 5 minutes when you're not busy. Let's do animal behavior studies. In other words, do dogs like the border collies? To me, probably the perfect dog. Because I don't need a guard dog. Well, at least not yet. We'll see when I get, you know, Action Radio Estates, you know, or Stately Action Radio Manor or something like that, or the Batcave. Might need some guard dogs. But I think a border collie German. Border collie German Shepherd mix are probably the best because they get a really healthy, active, intelligent dog that can, you know, herd, hunt, and do everything all at the same time. But has anybody measured? I mean, do dogs have a sense of humor? I mean, do you find them doing things that amuse themselves? I mean, just. Well, curious.
I mean, you know, I see them playing with toys and kind of entertaining themselves. I don't know if they find themselves funny or, you know, if they think they have a good sense of humor or not. I mean, I know that we definitely see dogs who are bored in their kennels or getting out and, like, they're not getting attention. They're like, all right, fine, I'll just amuse myself. And they're throwing toys up and playing with their bowls and things like that. So I definitely think that people underrate the intelligence of animals. I've always felt like dogs can sense when you're, you know, like my personal pets, like if I'm having a bad day or I'm depressed or sad or whatever, like they instantly know that. Or if I don't feel good physically, they behave differently as to if I'm coming home and I'm just like my normal self, you know, their demeanor changes. It's like they know how to read the room, which a lot of people do not, but the pets seem to be able to sense that. And I don't know if it's different with different breeds or if you just luck up and have a good dog. But I mean, pets as a whole, and cats, I mean, I don't want to undervalue cats. Cats are awesome too. They are just, as a whole, seem a little more independent. So sometimes maybe they don't care if you like them or not. So dogs are a little more dependent on, you know, pick me, where the cats are like, whatever, you know. So, but still, it's, we definitely see animals entertaining themselves for sure and, you know, kind of doing their own thing if they get too bored. So, and it's always fun to watch that because, you know, it's so cute, you know, especially if you get some kittens and they're like, hey, and if you walk by and you're like not paying them attention, they're like, fine, I'll find something to do. And then they're like, oh, this piece of paper looks good. And then they've got a game going with their fellow kitten on, you know, entertaining themselves. It's like, you know, pass the paper or stuff like that. So definitely animals get definitely underrated on their intelligence, I feel.
Oh, yeah, I feel most people do as well. It's really incredible. So this is why I like to let folks, you know, live up to whatever your maximum capability is. That's why I don't restrict guests and reporters. It's like, you know, people are like, well, what can I do? What's, you know, it's like, no, bring whatever you find interesting, you know, let's see what you got. And we explore. Is it better sometimes for people, especially if they don't have a ton of time, but they still want a pet anyway, to have two, like either two cats or two dogs? Does that make a difference? Or even a cat and a dog?
So it seems to be from the cat folks, what we hear are two cats are better than one because they have a friend. And for some dogs, that does, in the dog household, two dogs seem to work better. If a dog is maybe a little lonely, has a bit of separation anxiety, sometimes having a second pet can help. Now, depending on the breed of dog you get as to if that's a good idea or not, because if you get two energetic dogs, they could wear each other out during the day, or you could just have two super hyper dogs that you're dealing with. So it kind of depends on the personality and your lifestyle as well. But, you know, they are pack animals, so having another dog is enjoyable for them as a whole. They get to have a friend, they get someone to play with, and, you know, it's comforting for them when they're home, I think, and have a friend, you know, as opposed to just being by themselves all day long. Cats are a little more independent, but again, cats seem to do well in multiples. We have people that when they adopt one, a lot of times the kittens they'll get two. And they, you know, it gives them a buddy. So, and they grieve, just, you know, people wonder about that as well. When a pet in the household passes, or a human, the animals do grieve. Like, you can tell a marked difference in their behavior. And
So
it's just something to keep in mind. Like, when you're adopting, these animals will love you and be attached to you. So you want to make sure you're up for the challenge and you get the benefit. I mean, you basically are just feeding them, giving them a little love, and they're going to dedicate their whole life to you. So it's a pretty awesome trade-off what we get as humans out of, you know, from them. So.
Yeah. So I love being around other people's animals. It's kind of fun. But, it's just for me though. And there are people that shouldn't. And so if you shouldn't have a pet, don't get one. But if you can, you know, and I see so many people, it's like, they're everywhere. I mean, you know, people bring, and they bring them everywhere too. Although I don't see as much out here, but in California, a lot of times people will take their parrots out on their shoulders and drive with them. You'll take them around.
Oh my goodness.
The street.
Wow.
Oh yeah. It's
yeah. I don't see that here too much. We don't have a whole bunch of pet friendly places here. We do have some, but it's a little limited, but I think it's kind of starting to change and shift. So you're seeing a lot more animals in the community. Restaurants are having the dining areas outside where the animals can go, and other places are allowing them to come in. So I think as a whole, that's a good thing. And as long as people are responsible with their pets and make sure, you know, keep them properly leashed. And if they're not friendly, make sure not to take them in public until you've done some training. But as a whole, I think it's a really good thing. And I think the animals and the people will benefit from getting our babies out there and getting them socialized and getting them more, activity and exercise.
Yeah. San Francisco is really pet friendly. Some of the best hotels, like the Fairmont, you know, Knob Hill, you know, exclusive San Francisco, you know, world-class hotel. And it's pet friendly now. So you'll see, Fluffy
awesome.
Walking with the diamond collar, you know, with the one with purse, you know what I'm talking about, right? The only thing object to, the thing I don't like though, is I've seen restaurants where the dogs are sitting in chairs and they're eating at the table.
Oh.
And I'm like, I think you're carrying this a little bit too far. You know, put the dog on the ground, you know, give it a food bowl, and that's fine with me. But the minute you put it on a chair, in fact, I'll tell you
a
story before.
Or they feed it with their own fork and then use the fork afterwards. I see that.
You've ruined my day. Oh no, don't people actually
do
that?
I'm so sorry. I'm sure people do that, though. You know, I prefer, like, you know, I try not to. I will give my pets a little bit of people food here and there, but not from my fork. So.
No, please. But and they're still critters. But anyway, I remember. I'll tell this before Derek gets here. He should be here any second. When I was a tour guide in San Francisco, I drove this big open air cable car. I think I might have told you this story. And Union Street, which is the posh shopping district. Near Pacific Heights and the Richmond District in San Francisco. And I was driving down, and there's a woman who, you know, used to bring her dog to this little outdoor restaurant, cafe place. The dog was sitting, it was like a poodle something or other, you know, sitting at the table. And of course I pull over, and I got like 50 people on board this big, big motorized cable car. I said, excuse me, what has your pet ordered today? Oh, she's saying the Chateaubriand for pets or whatever it was like that. Well, thank you very much. So nice to, you know, of course I'm trying not to laugh. Internally, I'm dying laughing. It was hysterical, Okay. Anyway,
if you have someone to order good food for you, why not, right?
Yeah, exactly. But folks, you know, keep your pets on the ground. last bit of advice. Let's just get to quick contact one more time, and then I got Derek, and we're going to talk money and credit ratings and all kinds of things.
Okay, so Santa Rosa County Animal Services. We're at 4451 Pine Forest Road, Milton, Florida. Our phone number is 850-983-4680, and our website is santarosa.fl.gov/animals, or you can go to our Facebook page, Santa Rosa County Animal Services, and we also have an Instagram page as well with some cute photos.
Sounds good. Thanks, Tara. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Bye. You too. Bye now. Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities. And then there are the markets. Oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government. To make sense of all the places your money can go, Derek Park, our Action Radio financial reporter, joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money. Yeah, nothing to talk about, Derek. Trump got indicted, so he might as well just pass this week.
Oh, yeah, right? Just let it all go.
Yeah. Does that affect the market? Do people, are they watching politics? Or is it too early to tell? Or is it just like gossip at this point?
I really don't believe so.
Okay.
You know, it would be really hard to say that it would affect the market. Right now, let me just say it's not.
Okay.
The biggest thing that's really affecting the market was based on your first comment. U.S. credit downgrading by Fitch, right?
Right. Well, I was going to get into that.
You know,
I just want to have a little fun first.
That's only one That's only one U.S. credit rating that's downgraded. The other one still has us a AAA. Keep in mind, in 2014, our credit rating was downgraded to a AA before, right?
Uh-huh.
2014, we actually had a default. I think, in my personal opinion, their rating downgrade is a little premature because we technically haven't had a default. The fact that we've gotten down to a wire, that was their excuse. You know, is the past two times in budgets we've gotten down to a wire, so they lowered the credit rating. We still haven't missed any debt payments.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that is clearly what defines whether you know, you should be downgraded or not. So I don't know what their reasoning was behind it, other than, you know, they said that you know, we're you know, increasing our debt without any resolve, increasing debt without resolve.
Right.
And then budget talk getting down to the wire. That was Fitch's, you know, response to take us to a AA. Why I told you that I think it's a little bit of a nothing burger.
Mm-hmm.
Even Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan says it's a nothing burger. You know, the bottom line is there's not many countries in the world that have bonds that are A-rated, right? That's still below U.S. that are in positive yields that people want to buy. You know what I mean? Like there's the list is like 15.
What, Venezuela? Venezuela doesn't have great bonds.
Oh yeah. You want to buy those?
Yeah.
You know, it's
how about
funny,
Sri Lanka? While we're at it, you know, they screwed up their farming.
Right.
But,
yeah.
Yeah.
I saw an article that was saying, you know, China created a direct trading passage to Brazil. And this should be concerning to us, you know, and it's like, why? You know what I mean? Like, why is it concerning? We still export, like, an inordinate amount of food and items to, you know, everywhere in South America, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know why it would be that important, you know what I mean? While it is a large economy, it's not one we're relied upon. Oh, by the way, their real or whatever their money is also manipulated by the government. And they also, you know, their bonds that they sell for their currency are junk bonds. You know, while they have a great return right now because their currency is kind of growing, you know, they're like triple B rated or something like that.
Is it Brazil or China? Times. We're talking Brazil or China here. Brazil, okay.
Yeah. China's bonds are actually, I want to say they're AAA rated or AA, one of the two. I'd have to go check. I want to say they're AAA, if I'm not mistaken. You know, So
how do you buy bonds in a communist country? I mean, this is kind of a loaded question, but I just find it fascinating that China does everything a capitalist country would do except have a free market. They've got everything else. They've got the money. They buy property. They invest. You know, they invest in other countries. They buy ports. They're in our Panama Canal.
Yeah.
They're in Brazil. They're in the Middle East. You know, they got mines in Africa with child labor, so for lithium, for solar stuff. You know, they're everywhere. And I, you know, that's not a problem for me, except the fact that they're a communist country that completely oppresses their own country, and our you know, coup d'état is using them as a model of you know, where we should go. That's the problem with China. But the fact that China's, you know, doing market capitalism is not an issue for me. But you know, and we should just outtrade them. But it's just fascinating that a communist country or a country, in other words, it's almost, I don't know, is the term capitalist dictatorship? Does that make any sense? It's just, there's seen a contradiction.
You know, I really I wouldn't want to know, but you know, it's funny, like when people want to have, you know, communist talks, China is the model that everybody wants, you know, but, you know, homelessness and, you know, orphans and all the problems that we have exist over there as well. Right.
Right.
You know, is it kind of swept under the rug and not nationalized? Yeah, absolutely it is. You know what I mean? But if you go over there, there are people that roam the streets, beg for money. You know, they don't want to be a part of the system. So, you know, they share all the same problems we do. And, like, if you want to talk about infrastructure, right, you know, it's like everybody's like, well, I mean, it's really good. Okay, the places that they want you to see are an extreme, you know, an extreme view. They do pump those up really, really, really well. You get outside of that, the infrastructure falls apart like a wet tissue. You know, what I mean, this isn't just me talking from things. I've been there, you know. So,
where'd you go in China? I'm just curious. Where have you been?
Beijing, and Danlao, and then Beihaidu and Xi'an.
Oh, you have it around China? Well, this is kind of interesting. All right. Well, if you have any more information on China, I think it would be fascinating to kind of explore it a little more. I want to talk about credit ratings a bit, just so people understand what they are and how they work. No, if you have more on China, feel free. But I want to kind of go into a little bit of why it's a nothing burger and what a credit rating means. And is it similar to a card, your personal credit score, for example, that kind of thing.
When you have a credit rating, you know what I mean, consider – I think the cut line for junk bonds are, hold on, let me look it up real quick.
Sure.
Fitch credit, because I can't remember where their cut line is. There's ratings chart. Let me look at a chart because there's one of them that's a little bit different than the other one. Let's see here. S&P, Moody's, and Fitch. Yeah, here it is. Okay, so you have like triple A, S&P and Moody's are identical, and then S&P and Fitch are identical, and then Moody's is a little bit different, right? So you have triple A, which basically means your chance of default is like 0.00001, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to default. Everything is really, really good. When you go to double A, that means your chance goes up to like 1 to 2%, right? When you start getting into credit risk, the cut line is triple B, you know. Mm-hmm. So triple B, then it goes into, if you get double B, it's likely to fulfill obligations and ongoing uncertainty. So that's mm-hmm. That's where Brazil is, right? High credit risk is B. Triple C, I think the cut line for what they consider junk bonds is triple B. You know, so or it might be double B. You know, I'd have to look at what it is. And what that basically means is those are the ones that, you know, while they might pay higher interest because they have higher risk, they have a chance that you might not get your payment.
So you could get more money or no money. Good. What an option.
Yeah.
So the
market reacts negatively to this because I think what was the guy that was on Shark Tank, I think his comments kind of said it best. You know, he's like, hey, you know, do we want to advertise
Cuban
to the world
or something like that?
No, it was the bald guy. God, what is his name?
I know. I didn't watch Shark Tank.
Yeah. He's not on there anymore. He's kind of an outspoken guy for news outlets and things like that because, you know, business development and whatnot. But anywho, you know, his comments were, you know, this is something that we need to take very seriously because, you know, other countries are looking at us when we're the world's reserve currency. We're the currency that everybody needs a base, you know, the way they do business off of, right? And we've capitalized on that globally. He says, and here we go. We continue to, you know, more frequently show the world that we can't manage our own debt problems. He says, so why would we want to continue to advertise that if we want to continue to make sure that we, you know, remain the world's reserve currency, which helps our economy enormously, right?
Mm-hmm.
He just said that it's, you know, it's scary to him. I do think it's a nothing burger. I would say it won't be a nothing burger if, you know, within the next, you know, 4 to 5 years, the government doesn't really, you know, start taking debt seriously and start managing that better. Then it might start to grow into a concern for me.
Well, it was interesting. I was reading the Fitch thing. First of all, I read news articles about Fitch, and then I realized, as I'm looking through the internet, they actually have their own report. So, I mean, I always try to go to the most original or the original source, whatever it might be. So that's why I post Fitch, you know, tagged you on that as well. I didn't know who Fitch was. Fitch is British. I guess they're a worldwide rating service. And so I guess they're associated with the FTSE, which is the British, the London Stock Exchange. It's a great name for it. I've forgotten some of the different ones they have. But anyway, Nikkei, I guess, is Tokyo. FTSE is London. But those are big financial centers. So New York, London, and Tokyo are the big financial world centers, pretty much, right?
Well, they have the Shanghai. Shanghai Index. Yeah.
Okay. Who else? Is there a Middle East one like Dubai or United Arab Emirates or one of those places? They have one of the worldwide centers, big financial centers?
Ooh.
I'm just curious.
I don't know. They might. Well, that's one I don't know the answer to.
Well, like I say, I'm, you know, the classic, you know, big Western world would be Tokyo, New York, and London. Sydney might be a big one. Yeah, probably Sydney's not as big. But anyway, the point is that the world is looking at the U.S. credit rating. And I think what's interesting, as you say, it's a nothing burger. It doesn't change, you know, people's daily lives. But what is fascinating to me is the reaction to it. In other words, they yelled, Janet Yellen yelled, you know, and Powell and some of these other folks, how dare you downgrade us, you know, you miserable British twits, you know, and it's really funny.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's like they're almost scolding them for doing their job. It's like, you know, they're trying to treat Fitch like they treat, you know, American journalists. How dare you report real news about President Biden that he's not president? How dare you, you know, tell the world that there's a recession, you know, until we've told you to tell them there's a recession, even though there's a recession for the last year? You know, stuff that we do on the show here all the time, right? You know, we're always calling it as we see it. But it was fascinating that, and so these government people, you know, what kind of world do they live in? You know, that they think that they can do anything they want. They can say we have to raise the debt ceiling to meet our obligations. And Fitch even said that's not true. What they said was that they raised their obligations, and then they have to raise the debt ceiling to meet previous obligations, which is what I've been saying for like the last 5 years. But they actually said it too. It's right there. It's like, whoa. Someone else is telling the truth. This is kind of cool. But I think it's more that they took this arrogant action without permission from the worldwide powers that be. How dare they? How dare they say the U.S. credit rating is less than the credit rating really is? I mean, I think that's the real problem for the government, is that someone did something that they hadn't already pre-approved, which is kind of interesting.
Right. Hmm. No, I would argue, I don't want to say it's entirely politically motivated, but I would say that
I think
that there might be something lurking in the background there.
Okay. So bonds, we're talking bonds. So in other words, these are the bonds, like treasury bonds, that are issued by the government so the government can borrow more money, right? That's how it's connected in. Okay.
Right.
So if they're saying that the government has less chance of paying back, what they're really doing, well, actually, they said there's a lack of governance. When I read the article, they talked about how the budget deals, budget negotiations, the stalemates, the compromises, you know, the Inflation Act that actually raised inflation and all this other kind of stuff. So what they're worried about is the government's ability to, I guess, do what a lot of governments do, which is just, you know, they just do stuff. Here we actually debate things. Surprise, surprise. And I think that kind of – so they called it governance. I'm not sure the difference between governance and government, but apparently they're two different things. But that's what they were concerned with. That they don't think we have the ability to make a decision on the debt. And I think they've got a point. And we've been saying this for years, that we have to take away the power of Congress to borrow money because they're obsessed with it. They're insane. They're irrational. They think they can do it forever. They don't see that at some point, you know, the debt is shortly, the interest on the debt is going to be bigger than our defense budget, if it isn't already. I think they said in 5 years, interest on the national debt or maybe when it gets up to $50 trillion, the interest is going to be $2.5 trillion. Well, we only take in $5 trillion in revenue. So to me, interest is like dead money. It's money you pay that you get nothing for because, you know, you have to pay it, of course, because you're obliged to pay it, but you don't get anything for it. You know, when you invest in something, you get something for it. You've got a tangible investment. You can sell it, trade it. It can make you dividends. It can make you interest. It can make you income. It can do all kinds of things. But it's real. There's something there. But interest payments are like dead money. There's nothing, you know, if you're paying credit card interest or the government's paying bond interest, you're getting nothing for it. You have to do it. But, I mean, so interest payments are like the worst things in the world to have. And if our interest payments are half our entire federal revenue, that's a problem.
Yeah. I think it is. Well, how about this? If your interest payments are half your federal revenue and you're spending more than the other half, that's a real problem. They're talking about, if we were only spending, you know, $1 trillion per year, and we're banking the other trillion and it's paying off the debt. Okay, no big issue there, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, at that rate, if you know, there was really no inflation, all things being equal, you know what I mean? It would take us, 30 years to pay that back. Okay, that's fair. You know what I mean? But,
well, that's
you know,
that's
are
our,
we
that's
spending
my plan.
A trillion? Well,
yeah, that's fine.
No,
just,
because our defense budget's $700 billion.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So it's like, gee whiz, where's the other $300 billion going? Well, right now it's freaking Ukraine. You know, it's like, you know. I guess we're already.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Now we got problems. You know.
Yeah. So if all right, so you, it's easy to spend. Yeah. So if we have $5 trillion in revenue. $2 trillion goes to interest. $1 trillion goes to defense in Ukraine. That leaves you $1.5 trillion left. Well, I mean, Social Security costs that much, you know. So, and all of a sudden, so that means that a lot of government departments ain't going to be funded, you know. And you want to talk about shutdowns? So So the thing to do is plan now, folks. Don't wait for the crisis. So here's the question: are these people just not seeing it? They don't care. They have no grasp on reality. They figure they'll spend their money, you know, and then just get out before it crashes. What goes on in these people's minds, do you think? I mean, obviously it's speculative.
For what?
But,
what do you know?
Well, this is like a rationality test. They know they can't keep borrowing because sooner or later they're going to borrow so much they can't pay it back. They don't seem to care. They're racing to – in fact, they even got rid of the debt. So there's no debt ceiling, quote, unquote, until 2025. And even when we had one, they met obligations above it. They spent money that they didn't have, and then they said we have to raise the debt ceiling to cover the money that we spent that we didn't have. That's bizarre, too. So the psychology of this is very strange. I mean, where did they learn their economics? You know, fantasy land you or something? Go ahead.
I would argue that the next kick in the teeth is going to be the cut to the military budget.
Okay.
You know, they've really run out of places to go. You know, I mean, you know, and I hate to say this, but you know, let's just say, I think you know whoever wins the presidency is going to be on the hook to do something about the budget. You know, so if it's the Republicans. And, you know, they decide to go after the military, man. I mean, they're really going to piss off their voter base, you know, like a big portion of their voter base. Right. You know what I mean? They're very pro-military. You know, I'm not saying that some Democrats aren't, you know what I mean? That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, hey, the predominance of them, you know, are going to be, you know, conservatives. Right.
And military is tangible. Democrats, so you're talking about, right? Yeah. Go ahead.
Adversely. You know, they're going to be doing programs or they're going to want to pitch programs and they're going to go after the military. So, you know, I mean, they always really do. I'm surprised Biden hasn't done it yet. You know, I mean, they have a little bit. They've cut some of the funding to military research projects. They've cut some of the funding to, you know, military expansion projects. But they
Space
have
Force.
Plenty of money. Huh? Mm.
Space Force.
They have plenty of money to change all the base names, right? You know, so you know, it's to me. I mean, listen, I don't really care that they're changing the base names. Okay, yeah. Like that really doesn't bother me. Actually, to be quite honest, the name change at Fort Benning, which I spent a lot of time on, to Fort Moore, I think is amazing, right? That man, General Moore did, you know, that was in honor of I can't remember his first name, but the guy. Mel Gibson played in We Were Soldiers Once and Young. Him and Sergeant Major Plumlee.
That makes sense. That's a good name change. I don't even know who Fort Benning was.
I actually got a chance to meet them both before they passed away. You know, so yeah, they used to come to Fort Benning and do you know, do talks and speeches and stuff and you know, I mean, these guys are freaking, you know, amazing for what they did, you know, and what they were put up against. So name change like that, I'm all for that. That's great. Yeah. The problem that I see with it, you know, being a little two-sided here, a name change is not just a name change, right?
Yeah.
How much money do they have to spend in signage for all the signs around the post, right? You know, I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars. The next thing, doctrine, right? All the military doctrine that they've got to go in and change, you know, that has the post listed, you know, the military stuff. So when they do a name change, I mean, you know, it's a gut punch financially, right? It's a big chunk of money, you know, and then they're changing. I can't remember which base it is. Is it Hood or Bragg? They're changing to Fort Liberty. You know, it's like, okay, you could have found somebody, you know, Medal of Honor recipient, somebody, you know, like put a name on it for God's sake. You know what I mean?
You know, someone comes to
mind. I don't know. You know what I mean? They've got one, that they're
Fort
naming,
Washington.
You know, that was after the first Black Medal of Honor recipient. Okay, that's awesome. You know what I mean? That's great. I'm happy that we can do stuff like that. I wish they would do more of that. You know, Fort Liberty. Come on, man. I'm just like, whose idea was that?
Yeah.
You know, fire that person.
Yeah. We should get to the report. I don't think we've even covered it. We've been having so much fun chatting about this other stuff, but I think we put the credit rating to rest. But so don't worry about that too much. But it's just interesting. I think the criticism of government is the most significant, and their reaction to it. Well, let's get the report. Let's see what the numbers are, and we'll discuss whatever we have in the time you have available.
Sounds good. All right. Good morning, everybody. This is Derek with the Action Radio Economic Report. Stocks fall and yields rise for a second day in a row. The stocks fell, building on yesterday's sell-off as investors consider the effects of the economy from a downgrade in the U.S. government's credit rating. The real estate and utility sectors were the biggest laggards, down more than 1% each. Real estate and utility companies are typically more rate sensitive than any other sectors, and today's move reflects the rising yield environment. Bond prices were also lower as yields rose, with the 10-year Treasury bond almost across the 4.2 mark, missing or closing near 4.19. In our opinion, it was generally a risk-off day and a fight to safety as the U.S. dollar hit a four-week peak. International markets were also lower, along with gold. The price of gold and oil seems to have stabilized the price of oil seems to have stabilized around $80 a barrel. U.S. equities closed lower today, with the Dow Jones down 67 points, or 0.19, to 35,215. NASDAQ closed down 14 points, or 0.1, to 13,960. And the S&P 500 closed down 12 points, or 0.26, to 45,02. Again, in the bond market, Treasury yields are trading at 4.19%. In the commodity markets, the price of crude oil was up $2.20, or 2.77, and at $81.69. Spot price of gold was down $6.40, or down 0.32 to 1968. This is Derek with the Action Radio Financial Report. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
Utilities, you mentioned something about that. In our rush to convert everything to electricity, and incandescent bulbs just got banned, as far as I'm concerned, illegally, because that's just plain stupid. You can't deny Americans, our product choices, especially when they're decent products. But the banning of gas stoves, the banning of everything that's not electric, the mandating of electric cars, and some states are trying to get rid of, organic fuel cars, which is what I call them, gasoline and diesel. What's happening to the utilities? We've got so much power grid because the liberal states aren't building power plants. So the power grid's limited. They're converting more and more to electricity.
Yeah.
There's going to be larger demands on it. And we got 15 million extra illegals in this country, and they all use electricity. Has anybody thought about what's going to happen with our electric grid?
Sure they have, but I haven't seen anything. I mean, there has been people with all these electric car pushes talking about what it's going to do. I mean, I've actually seen some of those talks in Congress where they're like, hey, has anybody considered that we're already at like 85 to 90% capacity for the power grid? And then if you even add like 10% electric cars, that puts us over what our capacity is to produce power. And they're like, well, their response to that was, we're improving infrastructure as we're improving the car stuff. But, I've also seen other guys and specialists that they brought in, and they said, look, the power grid is not being increased more efficiently or faster than the request for power.
And the power they are generating is being generated by coal, oil, natural gas, and uranium. The organic fuels. Electricity, the solar and wind, the solar is dangerous. Everything from, child labor to the pollution to the batteries you have to dispose of. Wind power is killing birds of prey, and it's killing whales in the ocean. There's nothing good from these things.
Yeah.
And if you want wind power, get a sailboat. At least it doesn't do any damage. There's wind power.
Right.
or if everybody had like a little windmill on their house. When I was in Australia, the outback, and every little outback town you go to in Australia, they all have these little windmills, these two-blade aluminum windmills whipping around on their rooftops, because there's always wind and it's always hot, you know, and they have solar panels because it doesn't rain for 5 years, you know, so it makes sense. But in a lot of places, the whole idea of these wind farms, in other words, solar and wind is better at an individual level. You know, solar panels on your roof, great idea. Solar panels, you know, taking over acres and acres and acres of potentially really good farmland, you know, focusing your solar rays on a water tower in the center as birds melt as they fly by, not a good idea. You know,
right.
Acres and acres of windmills in the ocean where the whales are getting killed and everything else is happening there. Some ship's going to run into it. It's the new Titanic. It's just waiting to happen.
Why don't you go out to the desert, you know, where nobody, no inhabitants live, and just put solar panels. You know what I mean? Solar panels and wind farms.
Yeah. But again, I think it's better at the individual level. Why would you have to do it on a mass scale? And what's wrong,
well,
you know?
Have you seen Elon Musk talk on that?
No,
you know,
tell
me. He says something like 100 square miles of solar panels could supply power for the whole U.S.
He's
got a talk where he says that, and he jokingly says, look, he says, you could take like the whole southern corner of Utah. He's like, trust me, there's nothing there. I've been there.
nothing to him anyway. Square. Yeah.
Well, right. So, I mean, you know, I mean, I guess his argument is like, you know, hey, if we just did this with solar panels, you know, and maintain them, you know, we could supply the whole U.S., you know, and it's funny, think about this for a second. All the people talking about utilities that started doing the solar stuff, right? As soon as that started taking off, what did the power company do? They changed their rates to make it more money for them to make because they realized they were losing money. So now you know that it's a money game, right? You know, so what did California do? California did in some of their counties, these people were getting solar because their power bill, they charged them the connection charge like triple whatever it was, and their core charge was even higher. So they were paying what they were paying before.
Yeah.
You know,
it
almost defeats the purpose of having dang solar. You know, it's nuts, you know, and it's almost like racketeering, you know, it's like ridiculous.
Well, no, it's guaranteed income. It's protection. You know, they will get their same amount no matter what. California, I remember they had they told us all to conserve gasoline. And as the price went up, we all bought, you know, actually I had a wonderful Toyota Celica, 1977, you know, back in the 80s, looked like a Mustang. It was my early Mustang. But a lot of us drove four cylinder cars. I mean, almost everybody in the Bay Area in San Francisco drives a four cylinder imported car. You just do or a Tesla.
Yeah.
You kind of require, or a Prius. But the point is that we conserve so much gasoline that California raised the gasoline tax because they weren't getting enough money.
Right.
You know, so they don't care. They still want their money.
Yeah.
But overall planning, I would argue it's unconstitutional to deny Americans our choice of energy. If it's, especially if the only source is government, if electricity to me is government energy, because it comes from a public regulated utility, whereas gasoline comes from a private company, the oil companies. And so we have much more control over how much gasoline we use by simply being able to afford it. You know, if you have a V12, you know, truck and you want to drive it, you know, with like huge wheels, things like that, and you can afford it, who cares? But the government's going to come along and say, well, we're only going to give you so much electricity. In fact, in California, they have brownouts. They shut off the power. So you've got to drive an electric car. Oh, by the way, but you can't drive it, you know, during the summertime because we don't have the electricity for you.
Right.
They can't do that. You know,
but
this is the thing. They're forcing us into a power system that they don't have enough of. And that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree so. Yeah, I don't know that it's a problem right now, but damn sure going to be.
yeah. I still think we have a choice of energy. But the other thing, too, just one last point I was going to make, the gas stations. The oil companies build their own gas stations. We don't have to pay a tax for the oil companies to build, you know, their Texaco, their Chevron, their BP, their Shell stations, you know, or all the other Tom Thumbs around here and things like that. But they want us to pay for electric charging stations out of our tax dollars. That's wrong too.
Yeah. No, I do. But hey, I got to wrap it up, Greg. Got a gig I got to get to here in about 45 minutes.
Gig. Go for it. Thanks for your report. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
We'll talk next week.
No problem.
Or not.
Yep. No, we should be on next week. No worries.
Okay.
If I got to change, I'll let you know.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
You take care.
Yep.
Bye. Right. Bye now. Yeah, I love talking to Derek. It was the only chance I really get to talk economics all week, so it's really kind of fun. Fridays are fun anyway. I'm hoping Jonathan Mosley calls in a little bit, because I was talking to Jonathan off the air. I don't think he wants to wait till Monday because there's so much happening with Trump's indictment and some of the things. I've got an interesting thing I've been working on, my favorite section of law, Title 18, Section 241. And I think these idiots have totally opened up the ability of us to bring them to court. I don't even think they know they've done it, because they're so wrapped up in their own ideology and their own knowledge. People only see things from their own point of view. And I do too, but I really try and look at different sides of arguments so that I can use them. But people, they don't act, you know, they don't act in their own interest. They're acting in our interest here. So I'm going to take a break. What's it now? 8:04 Central Time. Hopefully Jonathan will be on soon. And then I'll try contacting him during the break now. And then I'll be back, and I'll do it myself, or we'll have Jonathan, or who knows. All right. Talk to you in a bit. Here is your Action Radio contact and website information. The call-in line is 215-383-3832. Our show site is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Same link, live and a podcast. Please share all our shows. We have live chat at the bottom of the broadcast page available worldwide. Sign in to your free account and type away. We have an internet Skype line where you can call the show worldwide also. Please see the broadcast page for our Skype name. Call in during the show to get approved. Our bill writing site is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. This is where anyone can write a bill and start the process of it becoming law. My paid and free subscription column is at gregpenglis.substack.com. Please consider a paid subscription of $5 per month or greater. For contributions to Action Radio, please go to givesendgo.com/actionradio. We have over 20 Action Radio Facebook groups. Use the Facebook search window by putting in Action Radio to find our groups. My public email is greg@writeyourlaws.com. Please contact me about advertising on Action Radio and helping our mission of freedom. Thank you for listening. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Dangerously cool. Okay, so for here, the rest of the show is just improv. I have no idea what's going to happen. I got a lot of stuff. I got a lot of material. I got some potential callers. A friend of mine, Dennis, who's on his way to the border, might be checking in. He's got a mission down there. Hopefully he's taking our bills to the Border Patrol. I used to know some of those folks, Art Del Cueto and Brandon Judd, the Border Patrol folks. I don't know if they remember me. I've tried to write them. Since, but I met them at the 2017 FAIR conference in Washington. That's the Federation for American Immigration Reform. That's where I met a lot of people. Michelle Malkin, I met, interviewed her. I just interviewed all these incredible people who had lost their kids to illegal aliens. Michael Harrison, who runs Talkers Magazine, was there. The president of FAIR was there. All these different folks. And it's the only thing that my station, WEBY, lost. They lost all those interviews. And that's why I haven't been able to present them. But those are fabulous interviews. And so I managed to snag all of them. But that was the week I was gone. And somebody else was filling in, while I was on convention. And it was really too bad. But those were great interviews. Anyway, so we'll get back. We're going to all talk to them when we can. Anyway, Bianchi's got a big note here that says simulated convention of states. After roll call, invocation, and the Pledge of Allegiance, commissioners were tasked with selecting a president of the convention. Interesting. During the first round of voting, 23 states voted for Louisiana Rep. Woody Jenkins. Don't know who that is. 17 states voted for Arkansas Senator Jason Rapoport. R-A-P-P-O-R-T. Don't know who that is either. And 8 states voted for Oklahoma Rep. Rod Standridge. There we go. No candidate won the majority. Okay, well, you guys can read the rest of it. The full assembly then split off into 3 committees, which commissioners, let's see what those committees were. We had chair of the term limits and federal judicial jurisdiction committee. We had someone else chair of the federal legislative and executive jurisdiction committee and chair of the fiscal restraints committee. Well, that's interesting. So Bianchi and I have a running dispute over the convention of states. My contention is that once you officially start a convention of states, it becomes just like a constitutional convention and everything's open. And Bianchi contends just the opposite, that they can be strictly limited to certain areas and they can't go beyond that. I don't think that's going to happen because I think the liberal states are going to crash it. They're going to demand to come in. The liberal media is going to come in. The Republicans are going to cave. And they'll emerge with a brand new constitution. And we're going to have a much bigger fight on our hands. What I would prefer is that the folks going into the Constitutional Convention have their amendments drafted ahead of time and say, this is what we're talking about. No language changes, no nothing. And if they do that, they'll be in a lot better shape. I still don't favor it, but we'll see how it goes. Which then brings to the topic of one of the things I want to do here, which is a constitutional amendment to take the power of Congress to borrow money. Now, normally amendments start in the Congress and then go to the states. The Constitution says if they go to the states, then they have to go to a convention of states and then to the Congress. So my new procedure for the constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money is that it go to the states by resolution. So in other words, it's not binding. They're not ratifying, but they're expressing their opinion that this is what we want. And hopefully a bunch of states will do that. And then they start putting restrictions on the federal government. In other words, unless you sponsor this amendment, we're going to, not do this. We're not going to pay for that. We're not going to hold your offices. We're going to, various restrictions. We're not going to send money for whatever. That's what I hope the states do by resolution. So then it goes to Congress. And this is how you avoid a convention of states of your whole constitution becoming up for a vote and discussion. So you take our amendment. The states, hopefully enough states will ratify it. Lots of states will ratify it, way more than the 2/3 required to actually pass it. Then it goes to Congress. Congress goes, oh, gee, I don't want this, but, I guess everybody wants us to do it. And hopefully by peer pressure of the states and of the people, Congress actually ratifies the amendment that says they can't borrow any more money. Then it goes to the states for official ratification after the states have passed it by resolution. That's how I would like to see it happen. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that would make the most sense to me to avoid the convention of states. And the danger of the whole Constitution being up for a vote as opposed to a specific amendment. And so that's why I want that amendment process to go forward. All right. Well, what's the big news? the big news, the exciting news, is that Trump was indicted yet again, which means his poll numbers are going up. Okay, we all know that. Yesterday, we went over the six, quote, co-conspirators. We went over the charges. We went over a lot of stuff yesterday to figure all this stuff out. In fact, let me pull up my many, many articles on this. We have that New York Post one. The New York Post one was hysterical. That was so funny. I should see if I can find where I put it. CNN, CNN, New York Post. This is the honest Newsweek. I may have to go back to Facebook and find it. I think I actually got rid of it. I can pull it up again. Easy to find. New York Post. New York Post, New York Post. So where's my New York Post case from? All these articles I have, and I pulled up one that I don't have anymore. Post opinion, New York Post. I know it's back here just a little bit. Don't mind me. I'll find it here real quick. Oh, who are the six co-conspirators? Yeah, that's the article. The six co-conspirators. We went over this yesterday in such great detail. Let me pull it up again here and add it to my long list of articles. But it talks about, this is from Caitlin Doombos, D-O-O-M-B-O-S, who I called Caitlin Dumbass yesterday, because it seems to make sense. Talking about what Trump's charges are. So let me just take this article here. I'm just doing a little plank. Don't mind me. Probably should have done this during the break, but I didn't think of it. Copy that, do that, get rid of that. I try to keep my websites to a minimum on the show. Otherwise, the signal gets kind of crashed. But we'll just add this one in here right now. All right, so what's going on? Well, we know Trump charges. In fact, I'm going to go over them with you right now and let you know what's happening. But what is fascinating to me is I think they've opened the door to a huge challenge. I don't even think they realize they've done it. And so the huge challenge is the fact that they've opened the door to Section 241 of Title 18. Now, Title 18 is basically the criminal code. Now, we've already proved that there's only three charges, three crimes that the federal government has jurisdiction over. I'm not going to do that again. I did that already this week, those being treason, piracy, and counterfeiting. And so because of that, because of the fact that the Department of Justice does not handle any of those crimes, neither treason, nor piracy, nor counterfeiting, counterfeiting is Secret Service, treason is Congress, and probably the U.S. Marshals to arrest them, and piracy is the military, Coast Guard, you know, National Guard, state police, stuff like that. From trucking hijacking to airplane hijacking to ship hijacking, piracy is handled that way. So there's no need for a Department of Justice. You know, but yet they're taking on Trump. Now, what is fascinating is that they've pulled, one of the provisions they pulled is a section that I have wanted to be used against government for a long time. But one of the reasons I don't think it happened was because government people have immunity. You know, you can't prosecute them for them just doing their regular job. Otherwise, government could be sued for anything and they never get anything done. One would argue that could be a possibility too. But the point is that we didn't think government officials could be sued or prosecuted, you know, under a lot of the normal statutes that other folks can be. Well, guess what? Jack Smith has proven that that's not true. And so what he did by using Title 18, Section 241, conspiracy against rights, he's saying that Trump, as a government official, conspired to violate the rights of Americans. We pointed out yesterday. They also said that he knowingly made false statements. This is one of the big claims of this case. He knowingly made false statements, and that's somehow a crime, right? And that's fraud, right? Well, we prove that everybody in government knowingly makes false statements. Anybody that runs for office makes false statements. It happens all the time. Just Jonathan, let me bring him on right now, and because this is going to be fascinating to go over. Jonathan, I'm just kind of just getting started here with our chat. But the big charge, I guess we can start here, is Jack Smith. He's opened the door on Title 18, Section 241. We can get into that. But this idea that they're charging Trump with knowingly making false statements. Well, what person campaigns for office and doesn't knowingly make false statements? Every broken promise is knowingly making a false statement. So you could say that a political campaign in and of itself is fraud, if that's your standard of justice. Should we start there? Good morning.
Well, so many, good morning. Sorry to be late. I had some...
I'm sorry. Don't worry about it. I can vamp.
Actions.
Yeah.
They, so there's so many places to start. But yes, this is... This is true. As I've been trying to warn people The January 6th prosecutions in general are assault on the First Amendment. The government will object and the judges will object that, you know, two things. One is that the First Amendment does not immunize things that are criminal. And so they'll just dodge the issue. And they'll say that all we're doing is trying to show intent about some other crime. It's like, you know, trying to prove that somebody did commit the other crime. In fact, of course, they're going way, way beyond that. And, you know, we pointed out and putting into pleadings that are out there that what they're actually – you can hear me pretty well, can't you?
Yeah. Your phone distorted slightly a little bit a minute ago, but now it's good. So we're good.
Okay. So the thing –
Oh, now you just cut out. You just asked me, and then it disappeared. Let's get you back.
No, again. that was nice. Decided to go on mute itself.
Okay, now you're back.
The thing is that they're using those two excuses. It's like, for example, if you, you know, if I beat somebody over the head while expressing my opinion, I'm still beating them over the head. The fact that I'm expressing opinion doesn't alter the action.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been using those two excuses all along, and it's been getting, you know, all these things that we've been warning about are getting, you know, more and more extreme, and, you know, now to the point where everybody is seeing it and is pointing out that, you know, they're just criminalizing differences of opinion, and you know, I thought that was obvious, you know, for a year and a half, and now
everybody else.
You know,
yeah.
Right. I mean, the thing is that when nobody's pushing back with the resources to do it, they just keep getting bolder and bolder and bolder, quite obviously.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what's happening. So, yeah, so you have, and I didn't hear the thing, you have four counts.
I got them right in front of me. Yeah, I got them right here if you need them.
I one of the reasons I was up late is we've got a friend of the court brief, and I'm trying to put together the team to do that, to further push back on this 18 USC 1512, which are two of the counts.
That's count two, right, yeah. Conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding. I've got that right here, yeah.
Count
number two.
Count three, and count three is the attempt to do so.
Right. Yep.
Under K. So two of the four, and right now the Supreme Court is being asked to review 1512 and whether it applies to this situation, which of course it does not.
Right.
And there's a circuit court of appeals decision as well that's pending.
Mm-hmm.
And we really need, and again, all these bums who, you know, who represent Trump or other things, and they don't do a damn thing. You know, for a few thousand bucks, an assigner who's admitted in the Supreme Court, we can try to push back on that. That would make two of the four counts go away. The first count, of course, is criminal conspiracy.
Right.
And it's 40 pages, roughly, of of just basically a liberal, you know, paranoid conspiracy theory. It's like the 40 pages of the criminal conspiracy are written as if they were written by, you know, the Huffington Post for the Daily Talk.
Well, and the first count takes like 95% of the indictment. Counts two, three, and four are just like the last page. It's really funny. Well, let me just stop here for a second because I got some really good news for you. And I want you to call Wednesday, 10 a.m. Central, because we got Christina Bob. And so this will be your chance to talk directly to Trump's attorney, Trump's advisor, and, you know, spend a couple minutes on J6 stuff. And we'll talk off the air about it because we only have her for a short time. So I want to kind of really focus, but I want to introduce you to and see if you can get connected, because I want all of us connected with the Trump campaign. because I think we all have something
well,
to offer.
Well, she,
yeah, but she'll be on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she should. Let's. I'm just going through my brain whether, and we could ask her about it. I got to make sure that the rules on an amicus brief. She's one of the good ones. I was going to say.
Oh yeah.
Alina.
Also, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Alina Habib, whatever. She's also excellent. But
I'm
a
not
lot
familiar
of the other
with
ones
her.
Are,
yeah, we've had Christine on the show, and she was great. But we only have her for a short time, so I want to talk to you off the air. Like I say, we want to focus in on exactly, you know, what we want to talk about. But I want to introduce you.
Well, one thing I want to do is ask you, including on the air, if, like last time in 2020, if Action Radio would like to be, you know,
yes.
one of the friends of the court.
Absolutely.
You know, we'll have to work on it. We'll have to work on how to get you. get
well,
some
I'm still
money
trying
for
to find
it.
Out. I'm still trying to find out if I'm on the Children's Health Defense list for the censorship case. You know, so you've got. So you told me about a website. I don't know if I have to join it or something, or maybe if you have nothing better to do for a few minutes, you know, let me know. But I've tried contacting them, and they're so busy. It's impossible to get through. Although I do have some interesting new contacts with Robert Francis Kennedy, which I'll have to tell you off the air too. But things are happening in that regard
well,
too.
Things are going crazy
right now.
When it comes to being part of a legal proceeding,
right.
If you're not sure, then you're not, because they would have to do some level of formality. To finalize it, they have your authority to represent you. And
I've already given
kind of
it. I'm supposed to be on. We've got. Well, I'll tell you how we've communicated off the air. Oh, Marco checks in the Netherlands. He's listening this morning also. He says, "Did you get everything out of your throat? Because when you cough, they can hear it. So you might want to just back."
Well, I do. I don't know what the problem is there, but the doctor says they're just.
Yeah,
it's just allergic, so don't worry about it too much.
Oh, I'm not worried about it. Yeah, Marco, don't worry about it. He's fine. We've been living at this for a while. But,
I've got other personality problems, but I'll live through the interview.
Yeah,
So let's get back to your question.
Yeah.
Which is what is this thing and what and so the of course people the government charges people with conspiracy usually when they can't win on the basic case. Conspiracy is usually the dodge when they can't make out a proper case for something. And as other people say, usually conspiracy is connected with the actual underlying thing. Having a conspiracy to do something that stands on its own is unusual. They say it's also unusual in the sense that what they're alleging in this 40 pages of and the thing is, you know, your audience should probably read it.
Yeah,
your audience should read it, but you won't hear anything new. I mean, it could have been transcribed from MSNBC. There's actually nothing there.
Well, I've got it here. I think I've already posted. I'll double check. But it basically, the counts are conspiracy to defraud the United States, as if they think they are the United States, right? Conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, which is what they did during the coup. I mean, everything they're charging Trump with is what they did. It's fascinating. They're charging Trump with having a, like you say, having a difference of opinion. In other words, they're saying that he's making false claims. Now, here's the big question. The big question is that does this not allow Trump in his defense? Because if they're saying he's making false claims that the election was stolen, all they have to do is prove that the election was stolen. And that's legitimate defense. And they can't stop that. Right? Or can they?
Yes, except that hypocrisy is the overriding principle of the Democrats, the liberals, and the court system. So by any logic, yes, they have just opened the door to bringing into court whether the election of 2020 was legitimate or not. And, you know, they keep saying that we couldn't, you know, the courts wouldn't hear it. Well, they have to
hear it now. We can hear it now. So, and he can bring in John Eastman, Rudy Giuliani,
and I think
Jenna
that every
Ellis.
Organization and every group out there should
the Arizona audit
seize on the opportunity to make that case outside of court,
right?
In preparation for that, because they, now I don't know if it's again hypocrisy is the way, but it's now okay to talk about it.
Right.
In fact, we have to talk about it, and I would suggest talking about it in the context of what is going to happen in the trial. So, it's
they opened the door, as they say, right? I mean, this is what they call opening the door. You know, in other words, Trump couldn't have brought up the election. They wouldn't let Marjorie Taylor, or at least her lawyers didn't bring it up when they were accusing her. So, this is just a weird This is just a weird thing to me. What they're saying is, you can't say. You can't have an opinion. You can't have a different opinion. You can't say the election was stolen because that's somehow a conspiracy and a violation that's a fraud. But he's just saying it. He's not doing anything about it. He's just saying it. And that's somehow a crime? This is bizarre. This is loony land.
You know,
hey, Bianchi, go ahead.
I'm between you and watching this simulated convention of the states with what 49 representatives. Representatives from 49 states is present, and we got a lot of black representatives from states too, like Kansas and Indiana. Hey, I was at a meeting last night, and there was two candidates for Secretary of State for the state of Louisiana. The black female and white male, they both were elegant, and they reveal that Dominion software is proprietary, meaning that you can't look into it. That is the missing piece of the puzzle of how the election was stolen.
Yeah, we
because
that
you
too,
can't
that,
look into that. You can't look into that. You can't look into that software. And you know these states. This state is going to a paper ballot. It's audited, and the results will be available shortly after the polls is closed.
Yeah,
but
Yeah, I want to go. I want to stick with Jonathan for a bit because I don't know how much time he has.
But anyway,
so
I'll let
can,
you guys keep
can,
on the program.
Yeah, don't go away. Don't go away, Bianchi. I want to talk about it, but I just want to make sure we get
well,
to,
me,
we get this
let
case
put
covered.
Together, that sure. Like I say, because as we said offline last night is like. Here, let me back up. First of all, I think that we should be We should be pouncing on all of these things outside of court because this is going to be several months. Even in your social media and everything like that, if you couch it in terms of here's what's going to happen in the trial, how are they going to say you can't talk about it when it's the case? And I think that we should shape the battlefield by getting the truth out there. And all the people saying, you know, we should move on, which is the stupidest thing to say. I mean, how can you move on? I mean, the thing is, anybody who says that we should move on is not moving anywhere. They're just more of the fake Republicans who are just, you know, they just want everyone to love them and, they just want to stand there and be, you know, march in the parades and everything like that. But they don't have the concept of actually doing anything. I'm arguing with somebody right now online who, you know, they're still of the idea that we want a candidate that we can look up to. And I'm saying, no, we want a candidate who's going to put on his overalls with his butt crack showing and get in there and fix the damn pipes.
Exactly.
You know, we do not want a candidate that we put up on a pedestal. We want someone who goes in there and knocks down walls. You know, we want someone who rips the head off our enemy. But there's this whole school of thought that a candidate is supposed to be the guy who, you know, gets introduced at the charity ball and gets up and says nothing and everybody applauses and then he goes home and doesn't do anything.
Well, that's why Vivek Ramaswamy is so dangerous. But I want to talk about him when, you know, we have more time,
right,
too.
Right, exactly.
But, he's a plant. He's a new Mike Pence saboteur. Yeah.
But the thing is, the idea that we should move on, meaning we should not do anything anymore, you know, like we've always done since the 1950s, they can't do that right now because of this. I have to assume that all these people are shocked that all of you in this audience and everyone else haven't turned on Trump yet. Because, again, the underlying principle is they think you're stupid. It's like, you know, it's like a four-year-old as well, okay, maybe a six-year-old doing a magic trick.
Right.
And you're like, yeah, I could see exactly what you're doing. You just smile and get polite. But all these characters, they think we don't see their tricks. They can't understand.
Well, have they tricked themselves?
Haven't you turned you back on Trump yet?
Have they tricked themselves?
Anyway.
Because it looks like they basically set a trap for themselves. Even it. They think they're so wrapped up in their ego and they're so blinded by their own, you know, self-righteous delusions that they miss the fact that they just gave us the biggest gift possible. They made it mandatory for us to bring in all the election evidence of fraud for Trump to defend himself.
Right. Now,
that's
of course,
hysterical.
Heard, I'm going to try to stick. I want to give the context. I think Bianchi was starting to talk about it. I was going to say, Bianchi mentioned why, how they, you know, the thing is, we have to be clear about our criminology that,
right.
In my view, how they stole the election it was all hands on deck. You know, they pulled out, you know, the ammunition from the Civil War. They did everything they could possibly do to stop Trump in 2020. There's... and everybody was doing it simultaneously and not always in coordination.
Uh-huh.
So they were doing absolutely everything they could think of to steal the 2020 election, including, you know, the friend of the court brief that America, that Action Radio participated in about changing the rules during COVID.
Yeah.
Basically to defeat Trump, they had to change all the rules. You know, if the only way you can win the Super Bowl is to change all the rules, which by definition means you're breaking the rules,
right.
You know, did you win? So anyway, but Bianchi was starting to, you know, that's the only thing I was going to respond to Bianchi is that I don't think there was just one. I mean, you can say I think this was the biggest, this was the main, sure. But I think that we have to remember there were so many ways they cheated.
But that's it. But what they're trying to do is say that just saying the election was stolen is somehow a fraud, and that's somehow illegal. That somehow, you know, not even the free speech issue, but that there's somehow a conspiracy. But what's ironic about this is that these are the people that actually did steal the government in a conspiracy. We had a coup d'état. They changed. In fact, I've still got the original article from Knight's News on the battleground state electors, and as I've said since January 6th. The key to this whole thing are the Trump electors. So what they really want to do, those Trump electors are still out there. They're still valid. They can still be certified, and Brandon's election can be dumped. You know, and that's one of those things I'm going to ask Christina Bob about next Wednesday, is what about the Trump electors? Especially the ones, because you've got, I think, four from Republican states with Democrat governors, and you've got three more with Republican states with Republican governors. They're just not certifying them, but they're there. They're still there. They're still valid. And they're saying that that's the conspiracy. These they're calling them the fraud electors, and they say that this independent state legislative theory, which of course is not a theory, it's a fact. Bianchi, go ahead. You know what I'm talking about.
Well, yeah. What happened? And I asked these people. You had state secretaries of state putting forth ballots, and you had the legislature putting forth electoral ballots.
Mm-hmm.
Secretary of State, that's not their job to do. Those electoral votes come from the legislature.
Mm-hmm. I got three articles.
That right,
I'll probably take it
Monday. The problem.
Yeah. So,
and you know, another thing too.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
You know, another thing real quick.
Sure.
Go back to the beginning. Was the count, the vote count. And this software probably has the ability, it's probably equipped with an algorithm to look for certain things. And when it does find it, it reacts like stop the vote count. And you can't, if they are proprietary, that means that it's, you can't look into it. Only Dominion can look into it. That's where I bet you
issues are. Right.
But it's not proprietary if it handles a public election.
Cracky's absolutely right. Like, I'm sure there are scenarios that will tell the computer just stop. That's a very interesting insight, and I think that makes perfect sense. And and if they're saying that, here are the election results, but you can't look.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then it's not been proven that they are that the election results are right. If they say, well, you don't have any evidence that the Dominion machines don't work properly, says, mm-hmm. well, yeah, but you won't show us the evidence that they do. And forgive me
that's
for
my
being
contention.
A little suspicious.
It's not proprietary if it's during a public function like an election.
A contract that they sign. You know, all you have machines, you have to do this, or you can't do that.
That doesn't sound like a valid
contract.
Right,
but that means that the election officials were stupid to sign that contract.
Huh.
All right. So anyway, so the thing is, what we've got here is, like I say, 40 pages of basically a dollar. I don't know. Do you feel like if you've been aware? I mean, I don't think anybody here, regularly watches MSNBC or you know, Insane Asylum. Greg, do you think that you've seen anything that you haven't been hearing directly or indirectly over the last 2-3 years? The lawsuit, is just, there's nothing new. There's nothing legal. It's just the same old Rachel Maddow.
No, there is something new. There is one thing new, and that's why the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is my favorite section of Title 18, Section 241, Conspiracy Against Rights. If two or more people conspire to restrict the exercise or enjoyment of a constitutional right. Now, what is so fascinating about this to me, what I want to talk about probably Monday as well, is the fact that I didn't know if that could be applied to government officials, because I'm thinking government officials have a certain amount of immunity from stuff that they do to the rest of us. You know, it's like a criminal law. And so this is being, because it's being applied to Trump in his capacity as a government official, that opens all government officials up to conspiracies for blocking the exercise or enjoyment of our rights. So that would include anybody involved in gun control. That would include anybody free speech or anything to do with censorship. That would include anybody who engages in a campaign, because they're knowingly providing false information. I mean, well, that's a different issue, but I mean, the can of worms this opens up. But the idea of Section 241, conspiracy against rights, two or more people. So that is, the Justice Department is two or more people have conspired to obstruct the exercise and enjoyment of the free speech of Donald Trump, of our free vote, and to have our vote count. I mean, they basically made the argument against themselves. They basically condemned their own coup in bringing up a law and applying it to government officials and trying to get Trump. So I've got three articles here calling how brilliant this is, but I think it's insanely stupid. And
how
it's
brilliant
good.
It is? Count four is their desperate bid to get Secretary of State in various states to keep him off the ballot.
Oh, that's what that is.
Because that's where the 14th Amendment says that if someone has engaged in an insurrection that against the United States, or that they can't be elected to office. Now, of course, this is not going to get resolved despite the Democrats' wishes time for the election. So they're going to have to go to various states and say he might be convicted, therefore he shouldn't be on the ballot. So this count four, not only is it wrong, my complaint about it is not simply that it's a Civil War era statute, which was about the states that rebelled,
Right.
But it just doesn't fit. It's like if you were going to sit down, and of course that's what Jack Smith has been most criticized for by the Supreme Court, is trying to stretch laws to say things they don't say, which the whole DOJ is doing, but Jack Smith in particular. And so, you know, if you were to sit down and look for the laws that somebody has broken,
right,
you wouldn't pick this one. It makes no sense. It's a bad fit.
Yeah.
it makes no sense. The only reason for putting it in there is to try to, you know, now again, if you go to a George Soros Secretary of State,
right,
and you say, he's been indicted for this, take him off the ballot. You know, they'll take him off the ballot. But again, all these things, it's so frustrating because I refer you back to my saying that Republican lawyers are stupid. Republican lawyers are just basically the Paul Ryans of the legal world.
Right.
They've been whistling past the graveyard really for decades, but now for a couple of years on these things. And, you know, they've lost the battle by not fighting it. Same with everything else, like climate change and you name it.
Right.
So when certain people were fighting these battles, you know, all the Republican establishment is sort of staring at the ceiling, whistling, going, you know, oh, nothing's going on. You know, there's nothing to see here. And of course, now it's coming back to this. And of course, they also think that the rubes are going to. I mean, see, one of the biggest problems is that the establishment on every level, they think that the rubes still believe them. So when the experts say that, you know, I don't know, wearing blueberries on your head will make you live longer, they go, oh, okay, I'll do that. And they don't realize that we don't believe anything they say, and we're never going to believe anything they say ever again. And COVID was one big part of that, but not only. And so they get up and they say these things, and we just laugh. They get up and they say, you know, anything that starts about, you know, a study shows, you know, cue the laugh track. So they can't understand this, that why haven't we – they've told us that Trump can't win. Why don't we believe them? We told you Trump can't win. Why are you still supporting Trump? Like, well, you're – because you're a bunch of morons. That's why. You wouldn't –
why
I mean,
are you believing – why are you still questioning the election? How dare you? We've already told you can't question the election. Yeah,
right.
And
exactly.
Yeah, we can.
And they think that because we – after World War II in the 1950s, where everyone was just happy and doing their own thing and happy they didn't get killed in the war
–
you know, they believed in the progress of science, and we had this priesthood of experts. What's going on here, among many things, is a war over the death of experts. It's like, you know, they are desperately fighting that their experts are the one, you know, are the true gods, and we have to believe in their experts. You know, whenever they blow the horn, we need to bow down and make noises like in Assyria, or Babylon, or something like that.
I think in Conan the Barbarian with James Earl Jones. But anyway, bow down.
Yeah. So when invoke the name of the experts, we have to bow down and say, you know, we honor the experts, and we
yeah. Well, Dr.
Fascist,
you know, ended that because nobody believes him. I want to read this law real quickly here and get your opinion. This is from the Legal Information Institute, Cornell Law School,
let me connect the dots there for a second.
Sure. Okay.
Because their biggest thing is that Trump knew he was lying because somebody told him he didn't lose the election. So
somebody
you
told
know
him?
That the COVID vaccine, you know that the COVID vaccines work because Anthony Fauci told you. You know, so when you say that the COVID vaccines or the booster shots or whatever they say doesn't work,
Mm-hmm.
You know that you're lying because Dr. Fauci, whom none of us believe, told you that, you know, you're wrong. And I mean, so Mike Pence told Trump that that the election wasn't stolen. I mean, hey, how would Mike Pence know? Did he go down there and inspect the machine? You know, did he go down there and interview anybody? No. Bill Barr said there was no widespread fraud. But then he also admits he didn't look.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like.
Well, he said there wasn't enough fraud to overturn the election. Why does he know that?
Right. It couldn't possibly.
And that's not the
standard
anyway. You know, that's not the. We've talked about this before. That's like saying that it's not a bank robbery unless you steal enough money to put the bank out of business. What? That's ridiculous. That's
Good
not
point.
The standard.
So,
yeah.
So, but the thing is that because people whom Donald Trump doesn't trust, we don't trust,
who
demonstrated that we can't trust them,
uh-huh.
Said there was no fraud, election fraud. Even though they say, well, we didn't look, you know, so when they said, well, he was trying to tell Bill Barr to open an investigation,
mm-hmm.
and Bill Barr says, you know, refuses, says, well, that's not what the DOJ does. They're state-by-state elections. Then he gets up and said, there's no fraud. So you just got done telling us you're not going to look. So how do you know if there's any fraud when you refuse to look? And so Donald Trump has committed fraud because when the experts told him, you know, it is known, you know, that the election was the best ever, and you didn't believe them. That's insanity.
Oh.
So Dr. Fauci, because you don't believe everything Dr. Fauci said, you're lying. Could it be that Dr. Fauci is the one who's lying?
Right, exactly. Yeah, we call him Dr. Fascist, which pretty much tells you where he stands with me. But let's talk about Mike. You brought up Mike Pence. Mike Pence, to me, is he's the one that committed the crime because he completely violated what the Constitution says. He said that he cannot turn the Trump electors, the dual slates of electors, back to the states. He can't do that. And I'm contending that that's the only thing he could have done. Or at least turn it over to Congress to take a vote. But they didn't do that either because they went down below and did a coup underneath the Capitol while Trump supporters were taking selfies up top when the doors were open. So he's lied twice. So you want to talk about a conspiracy? There's a conspiracy. There's a conspiracy to commit election fraud by Mike Pence, obviously. And he's on the record of saying he can't do the one thing that he specifically had to do, which was send the dual slate electors back. See, the electors
right.
are still the key to the Trump electors are still the key
well,
to this
but,
whole thing.
But at the very uh-huh. least,
right.
they have to decide between. If he said, well, we're really going to let the states decide, or we're going to let mm-hmm. and again, remember the state legislatures, in these places, you know, they said that yes, we see all this allegation of fraud, but we're not allowed to convene ourselves.
And that's not true either. Yeah, that's a lie
well,
too.
But that's what they said. So you've got Mike Pence mm-hmm. saying you should send it back to the state because the states are telling you that they have to wait for their governor to call them into session.
Right.
So if Mike Pence had sent it back to the legislature, you say, well, why didn't the legislatures act? They're claiming because they're geldings and they, you know, they want to run and hide in the, you know,
like
in the shadow.
you know why they're
saying, what?
You know what's up with that, too, what you just said? You got red state legislatures, but you got a blue governor sitting at the helm like in Louisiana.
Correct.
Bill, it was
Correct.
A Democrat. And that's
right.
where
so,
flaw lies there.
Right.
I agree with you. It has to go back to the legislature. Now, this stuff about that the governor has to convene the legislature, that probably is so. That right there is a flaw.
But I think that if the vice president had sent it to the legislature, they would have to respond. They say by law in our state, our sessions are you know, happen at certain times of the month, or if the governor calls them. But if the vice president of the United States sends them the question, I think that they would have, of course, I think they do have the power. I think they're, you know, they're liars and they're just trying to avoid controversy. But if the vice president sending them the question would, you know, justify them meeting and looking into the question. Remember, just remember that a lot of these states, they never looked at it because they're saying, oh, we, you know, we'd love to do that, but we can't, you know. Anyway, there's that.
Well, I've got something from the original Knightsbridge article, the one that you cannot find anymore. It's been pulled from the internet, but I copied it. And this is the best source on the Trump electors. It said on the 14th of December, seven states sent a slate of Democratic electors chose Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. Republican electors also cast votes for President Trump, thus creating seven sets of dueling electors or alternates. Both groups are sending certificates of ascertainment to Congress, which is slated to convene in a joint session on January 6th. Okay, so this is written between December 14th and January 6th to count electoral votes. And then it says here, a couple more things here. It says the electoral votes have been officially counted. All right. In three of the seven states in question, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, Republicans control the state legislatures while Democrats hold the governor's posts. So those states can be in dispute, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. In Georgia and Arizona, Republicans control both. And New Mexico and Nevada, Democrats control both. So you've got state legislatures in Georgia, Arizona, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. The state legislatures control. So those Trump electors should have been certified January 6th. So the coup was taking the state legislators, you know, electors, the Trump electors, and saying they don't count. And that's the coup. That's where Mike Pence broke the law, broke the Constitution, broke everything by saying we're not going to consider, you know, the Trump electors, even though the Republican state legislators, the duly authorized people to make the electors, have put forward these Trump electors. So you got five states of Trump electors that should have been certified as Trump electors by Congress, or at least talked about. They didn't even talk about them. That was what the whole coup was. It was so bad, they didn't even bring him up for – well, I guess they brought him up for a vote eventually, but by then the coup had already happened, and they were all arm-twisted to vote for the Brandon elect no matter what. That's the coup. The coup is taking Republican legislators, Trump electors, and not even considering them. So you want to talk about a conspiracy?
Well,
there's your conspiracy.
Well, what happened is Pence chose the – you believe it or not – Pence chose the Democratic electors.
Well, yeah, Pence is the first, you know, first candidate of one party to steal the election for the other party. That's what he did.
Yeah, but you're right. But you know, the problem, it all should have went back to the state legislature, as we did, as you just described. There, in fact, lies the flaw. When you have the legislature that says one thing, then the Republican legislature says one thing, and mm-hmm. then you got a Democratic governor that's saying another thing, and then you also have a Secretary of State who's not supposed to be saying anything when it comes to this matter.
Yep. And here's where it says, here's more from the article. It says, according to the Congressional Research Service, when dueling slates are received, so in other words, there are two slates of electors. Okay, we're not talking about, you know, things that weren't done. Not that this isn't wishful thinking. There are actually two independent slates of electors from these battleground states. It says members of Congress in the joint session consider the list when it's from a different state authority than the certified list and conduct a vote. Acceptance of either slate would then require a concurrent agreement in both the House and the Senate. So there are two options here. One, Mike Pence could have sent them back to the states before January 6th and say, send us one back. So you got two slates of electors, send us one back. He could have done that. He says he couldn't, but that was one option. The second option was January 6th. What they should have done, starting with Arizona, of course, that's when the coup began, you know, would have been to go debate for a couple of hours and then come back with a vote. Which slate of electors does Congress decide on? But both of those procedures, in order for the coup to be successful, they couldn't allow either one because they couldn't take a chance that either Congress would certify Trump electors or the Republican state legislators would certify Trump electors. They had to go for the Brandon electors, and that, in essence, is the coup. Right, Jonathan?
Well, yes. And, of course, everyone has heard right now, I think, that unless I'm interrupting the wrong summary with that, that in the Kennedy election,
right,
John F. Kennedy, which is Richard Nixon won the state of Hawaii on the first.
Yeah, you're real quiet right now. Your line's real quiet.
What? Well, I must be in a different part of the house. Just can you hear
okay,
me now?
Now you're better. Yep, now you're back. That's good.
That side of the house is just, who knows? It's not always like that. So
don't go there.
So Richard Nixon ostensibly won the state of Hawaii. The Democrats sent an alternate slate of electors from Hawaii for the Democrat, John F. Kennedy. So the Congress had two slates of electors. The Democrat state of electors is worded identically to the 2020 Trump electors. When the 2020 Trump electors sent in their alternate possibilities, they copied, words, almost word, what, to the extent that they could without, state your name. They put their name in there. They copied from the Democrats,
right?
From Hawaii. I guess it was the 1960 election, and they heard that dispute. They gave Hawaii to John F. Kennedy, and it was, I forget in what context, but they said that they argued that if Hawaii had not sent an alternative slate of electors, they could not have done that. Because the Congress had two sets of electors from Hawaii, one for Nixon, one for John F. Kennedy, therefore,
right,
they were able to choose which one to use.
Yeah, well, it says in the article here the same thing. It says the governor of Hawaii certified electors for Republican Richard Nixon. Democrat electors in the state legislature cast their votes for Kennedy. That's why the legislature was chosen. That's why the Kennedy slate was chosen, because it was put forward by the legislature. Same thing here. So what they've done is – now here's the question. Conspiracy. What is the legal definition of a conspiracy?
It's an agreement. It is an agreement to do, now we're talking about, of course, a criminal conspiracy. You can have a conspiracy,
right,
to have a secret, to have a surprise birthday party. But when it comes to the level of being a crime, a
right,
criminal conspiracy, it is an agreement to do something that is illegal, or to do something that is legal in an illegal way. And the person charged with the conspiracy, or being part of the conspiracy, has to have taken an overt act to advance the conspiracy, which I argue means that it has to be something that is unambiguously in support of the conspiracy. So, for example, if we're going to go rob a bank tomorrow morning and I get up and make breakfast, I would have had breakfast anyway.
Yeah.
So to my mind, that doesn't count, but I don't see that distinction. You have to understand, you've heard that federal prosecutors almost always win. And I'm seeing more and more it's because they cheat. They lie, they cheat, they steal. The rules are all rigged against the American citizens who are charged with a crime. So anyway, so there's a lot of things that are very fuzzy and are tilted in the direction of the prosecutor. And, of course, basically, in the District of Columbia, they could convict Trump of having orange hair. They could.
Well, wait, so here's another question, though. How is it that the New York FBI head, whatever, U.S. attorney, can use a D.C. jury?
Well, he can't.
Oh, okay.
I mean, the thing is, but the thing is they're going to try to say that, I mean, because they're going to try to say that the crime occurred in this January 6th thing in the District of Columbia.
Right. But Jack Smith is in New York. He's in the Southern District of New York. He's in the Southern District of New York. It's like cross-jurisdictional. How come the D.C. people aren't – Jack Smith, the guy that's prosecuting Trump, right? He's in the Southern District of New York for the FBI, DOJ, whatever it's called. What is he, U.S. attorney,
well,
whatever he is?
He should be authorized to bring a case in any district. But
okay.
He does – it's like Hunter Biden, when they tried – the DOJ didn't back them up,
right?
But they're gonna, you know, they give Jack Smith the authority to do that.
Huh.
But so the thing is that, you know, this case would be, the grand jury would have returned no true bill in any normal state in the country. Hmm. I mean, the grand jury would have like laughed at them if it wasn't in D.C. In any event, so that's where they've got this thing where he's guilty of fraud. Oh, see, here's the thing. What is fraud? Fraud, you know, is not just like, for example, if I sit there and I'm showing you my car that I advertised on Craigslist, and I say it's in perfect condition, and you can see right there it's not. That's not fraud. That's, you know, that's because you could have, you know, so for example, to send in an alternate set of electors when everybody knows, the entire planet knows that on its surface, Joe Biden won that state. That's not fraud because you're saying, I think it's wrong. I think you should count these electors. But everybody knows about the dispute. You know, fraud would be if, you know, someone snuck, you know, broke in the middle of the night and switched the electors without anybody knowing about it. But to send in,
or did it by computer?
To send in two slates of electors,
and
say one of them is, you know, we think that it's wrong, and here's the alternative. But everybody knows about it. That cannot be fraud because it's out in the open.
Well,
I mean,
But the fraud
if
is
say
the people. Go ahead.
Yeah. If I say that my 2009 Dodge was owned by Elvis Presley, and who died long before 2009, so they say.
Right.
Then, you know, they think, well, that's nice, but everybody knows it's not true.
Huh.
So that, you know, that I could not be convicted of fraud. Someone has to be. It has to be something that somebody reasonably relied upon.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they actually did rely upon it to their detriment.
Well, can't they countercharge?
So,
I'm sorry, go ahead. Finish. I don't know.
No. Go. What?
Well, can't they countercharge? In other words, is there such a thing as like malicious prosecution or something like that? Or fraud? Can't you countercharge as part of your defense that the real fraud is the fact that they're lying about the election, that these alternates are perfectly valid, that the state legislatures, you know, by the Constitution, you know, can pick their electors.
Are you asking if Republican lawyers were competent? Is that your question?
I'm talking about, well, I'm sort of gearing up for a Christina Bob, you know, quote or question that can Trump not counter these charges by saying that the people who are bringing the charges are in fact frauds themselves? Because
yes,
they're saying something they know isn't true. They know the election was stolen.
Well,
they know who did it. They know how it was done. What's that?
Within the criminal process, you can't do anything until you win. You know, as long as it's chugging along and anything like that, there are things you could do, of course, but that sort of thing has to be based upon you were charged, and it had no basis, and in fact, you won. Then they can be charged with malicious prosecution. If they lie, some people could file bar complaints. But the D.C. bar, you know, is the swamp as well and always has been. So, but are there other things that that Trump could do? Yes, he could start up by firing 90% of his lawyers, keep Christina Baum and Helena Habib and some of these other people,
right.
And they could file a massive lawsuit.
Right.
When Robert Mueller, remember, this is the thing is, people, the people who say we need to move on, they don't, among a thousand things, they don't understand that these are rehearsed. Each abuse is a rehearsal for the next one.
Right.
That's what you got to realize. So when Robert Mueller was doing the same thing already, they were honing their skills, sharpening their knives, learning their tactics, and getting ready for the next time, which is now. So Robert Mueller went after Jerry Corsi. Why? I have no idea. I mean, I don't remember. I worked on the case, and I don't remember what he supposedly. Supposedly, he might have been at some meeting or something. Who knows? And so Larry Klayman, actually, I helped put them together. Larry Klayman went and sued, you know, slapped Robert Mueller with a lawsuit. Well, Mueller backed down. So, and could Trump do the same thing? Well, yes, but not carrying all these deadweight lawyers on his back. Because here's the bottom line to me, and is, you know, and people are saying it's a sham indictment. No, they're not. You know, they're not sham indictments. They're obstruction of justice. Under the Democrats, you know, a racketeering, corrupt, and influenced organization, RICO,
right,
is often someone operating a criminal enterprise from within an apparently legitimate organization. So you have a pizza, well, don't mean it to be too home, close to home, but you have a delivery service, and say half of the people there, the others are not, are using it to deliver drugs.
Right.
You know, it's just they're doing food deliveries as a cover to distribute drugs. The pizza place is not doing it. The manager may not know about it. It's not the legitimate purpose of the thing, but within the company or organization, a criminal enterprise is being conducted. The Department of Justice is a government agency. And within that government agency, Merrick Garland, Chris Wray, Jack Smith, and, you know, hundreds of other people are running a criminal enterprise. And they are, I mean, the fact that they indicted Trump the day after Devin Archer testifies and basically puts the final nail in the coffin of Joe Biden money laundering bribery scandal, you know, syndicate.
Oh yeah, he's caught. I mean, there's no two ways about it. But
the point is they're indicting Trump to protect Joe Biden, and as Dan Bongino ultimately says, ultimately to protect Barack Obama. So they are using these indictments to obstruct justice.
Right.
Yeah, and in fact, why? You know, I've known January 6th now for 2 years or more, and I thought the indictment that came out this week was really lame. I mean, if I had to say about trying to write an indictment for Donald Trump, it would be dishonest, but I could have done a way better job. And it makes me think they slapped something together last minute simply to knock Devin Archer out of the headlines, and there will probably be a superseding indictment where he tries to, because they do that a lot. They'll file an indictment, and then they'll amend it. But
well,
right now,
Go ahead.
What?
Well, I was going to say, I want to get back to Obama and Biden in a second, because I think you really honestly, I want to explore that a little bit. But anyway.
Well, I'm not the expert on that, but there are people who will tell you in detail that there's no way that Biden is guilty without Obama being guilty. And he says one of the reasons why, some people say one of the reasons why the left is freaking out is because Devin Archer and all this stuff means Michelle Obama cannot ride in and save the day from Biden.
Oh, that's interesting. Because she's tied to
Barack is,
right.
Because Barack is as guilty of sin with everything that Biden did when he was vice president.
Has anybody discovered just how much Obama's controlling the Brandon insurrection? Is someone talking about that I could look into? Because I haven't really seen anything about it yet.
Well, no, but, I mean, again, one of the big differences between Biden and Obama is that Obama is clever. So he's not gonna leave his wallet behind at the robbery scene.
Well, but was it Dan Bongino you said this? Because this is really, now we're getting to the core of the matter. Pianki's back, which is good. I'll get his opinion. I want to talk about the Convention of States when we're in just a little bit here.
Okay.
Give him a chance on that. But this is really the key. That's what I'm thinking. I just want this.
Well,
I mean,
he spent like 3 hours on it. More than once. Don Bongino was in the Secret Service.
Yeah. I'll take a look at his stuff. I'll listen to his podcast and things. But let's tie this in. So the real objective here, obviously, is to keep Trump off the ballot because they know Trump can win. They're using a bogus case to saying that he caused an insurrection, so he can't be put on the ballot. That's not going to work. I don't think any of this is going to work, but it does cost him time and money, and that's an objective too. But you're saying that ultimately this is to protect Brandon so that Brandon doesn't get investigated and thrown out of the White House. And then ultimately protects Obama. So let's tie that together. Let's just tie that together.
Because
then,
there's no way that while Obama – I mean, the thing is, if the things that we now know for certain Biden did while vice president.
Right.
And before being vice president, so that, as part of the selection process, we'd come before him. Someone would come. I mean, even if Obama was not directly involved, which I believe he was, he's the puppet master. Do you think Biden is smart enough to do this stuff?
No,
I
want to know
who
pulls Obama's strings. See, I'm beyond that. I want to know who's pulling Obama. Who's making him do it? I don't think he's a completely independent agent. He's got to be part of a coalition of world government, stooges with Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab and the rest of them. And the Chinese Communist Party.
Obama is way smarter than Biden.
Oh, he's way smarter than a lot of people. That's what makes him dangerous. But what I want to know is what you know specifically about this Biden-Obama, connection. Is Obama, pushing the lawsuit? Does he, did he pick Jack Smith? I mean, how much do you know about Obama? Or should I just listen to the Bongino podcast?
Well, I don't know a lot about that directly, but people who are looking into it, first of all, I think when Obama went back to the White House and he looked around and saw all the White House staffers under Biden, he said, man, you guys were all kids when you worked in, I mean, he said, he basically admitted that the people running the Biden White House are his people.
Oh, yeah. Well, we know that.
Well,
I said when Obama visited the White House, he was there to give Joe more instructions. I mean, that was his purpose. he was there to, meet and greet all his friends and issue new instructions. But he can do that anyway. Well, let me ask Pianki some question while you're still here, if you have a couple more minutes. Michelle Obama, what do you know about her in terms of her ambitions, Pianki, or just Obama in general? And how come the chef was killed?
I don't follow the Obamas.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you. I don't think she has ambition for that, looking at her, from what I see.
Well, she'd have
I
to
really
work.
Doubt.
She doesn't have a great work ethic from everything I've seen. I've never seen her actually do anything other than magazine covers and school lunches, and even that was done for her. So I don't see her as having the work ethic or the ambition to do anything.
Michelle ain't no Margaret. Michelle's not no Margaret Thatcher.
But
she,
the argument,
she just don't have that personality, I don't think, to be a...
The argument is not that she wants to be president, although I think, who doesn't? She's got a big ego. The argument is that the Democrats realize they've got nobody. So whether Michelle is in on it or not, you know, I think the commentary is that the Democrats realize that if they have to dump Joe Biden, they've got nobody. And that's, I think, why they're freaking out and getting desperate.
Well, they got nobody with him either. You know, that's the thing. So, I mean, is it going to become more and more obvious that Obama's pulling strings back there? Is that going to come out? And can the Trump team use that? Say, wait a minute, not only is he not president, he's not even in charge. The White House is being run by a private citizen. I mean, is that a potential defense against this lawsuit? You want to talk about a conspiracy? There's a conspiracy for you.
The problem is that, of course, all kinds of evidence have been excluded by these dishonest judges.
Okay.
In any normal, it's like the Earth went through a tear in space and we're in an alternate universe.
Right.
Things that should be, and people say, well, why don't the lawyers try this? Like, yeah, we did. You know, why don't they try this? You know, and the judges just won't do it. So, any logical thing about what the Trump team should be able to argue is going to run into the judges' furious attempts to keep it out. But that's why we've got to get, you know, we need so much money. We need so much help. We need political researchers. Anybody wants to just do, fact research on the internet or stuff to put in, like, all the things that the judges have said about January 6th. We need so much work, but we need to get them out. We need to get it out of D.C., and I hear Trump's lawyers saying that, but they don't understand. We've already litigated that for 2 years, and they're gonna F it up. Any competent lawyer for Trump would be, you know, renting a hotel ballroom with all the J6 defense lawyers together and say, okay, you know, no attorney-client privilege, but tell us what you've experienced. So we want to do this. Like, yeah, we tried that. Here's what the government said. Here's what the judge said. You have to do it another way. If it depends on that, but like we said offline, in theory, there's two different ways to say this. One is that the government has to prove that the election was not stolen.
Right.
Now, people are saying, at a minimum, they have to prove that when Trump did all these things, he did not believe that the election was stolen, which, of course, they can't possibly prove. How can they do that? I mean, the idea that Dr. Fauci told you that the vaccine was fine, you know, that doesn't mean that you accept what Mike Pence or Bill Barr or all these other, you know, charlatans said. That's all they got, is that these various people that Trump wouldn't believe anyway, that because they said it, therefore Trump knew that the election was the best ever. That's ridiculous. But even if they don't have to prove that the election was correct, I mean, in theory, they just opened this up to be the trial of the century and put the entire 2020 election on trial.
What I'm saying. They screwed up. Let me get one more question from Bianchi if he has one. But that really is the essence, is that they just opened the door for all the election fraud evidence from Mike Lindell,
from Steve Bannon, from everybody. Let me finish by saying whether or not you say the government has to prove the election was good or that Trump has the right to prove that it was stolen, either way, in any honest system, the entire case has just now become about whether the election was stolen or not.
Which is fascinating. That's hysterical. Do they do that consciously, or do they just screw up?
No. They don't think they're Democrats.
I love it. This is so much fun. All right. Well, let me let you go, but I wanted to just check with Pianca, make sure he doesn't have any more questions. Pianca, do you have one more question for Jonathan? And then I'm going to take a break and we'll talk Convention of States. Pianca, going once, going twice? Okay. Let's pick it up Monday, Jonathan. And then, of course, we got Christina Bob briefly. You're going to have like maybe 3 minutes because she's only got maybe 20, 25 minutes tops. So we're going to be real brief, real direct, and do a lot of talking.
On our Supreme Court, Supreme Court brief that I sent you.
Is it in my email? Where did you send it? Okay. Let's make sure I've got it here. Let me take real quick.
We'll talk.
Oh, there it is. I've got it. Yay, this is going to be fun. This is great. We do it. Action Radio is getting more and more exciting. All the things that are happening. I got some things I can't tell you on the air, but there's more happening too. There's a lot of things happening,
right,
including today. This is going to get exciting, folks. Uh-huh.
We have to try to get some stuff to Mike Lindell too.
I know one of his reporters, right? I mean, I've been on with Emerald Robinson.
He should come to D.C., rent an auditorium, and just put on, from now until the trial, he should just, outside of court, prove everything that we talked about. Why?
Well, he's got the plan. Have you heard this big plan of his? He's doing something August 16th, I think. He's doing like a three-day convention.
I signed up for it, but I think that he should bring it right to the beast doorstep.
Okay. Well, I'm going to look at that convention. We'll talk about that Monday. Thanks for coming on Friday. I appreciate the extra time. It's been very interesting. Yeah.
Thanks. And go for Pianchi. I'd like to hear about the Prince in the States. I'll probably have to listen to it a little bit later, though.
Okay, we just catch it on the air. I mean, do it the way everybody else. blogtalkradio.com/CitizenX on your phone or computer, and you can listen in live. Yeah. All right. Let me play. Thanks, Jonathan. Let me play a couple of things.
Sure,
now, for those... you're welcome. For my listeners, Jonathan's on normally 9 a.m. Oh, we're getting background noise. Who's in the background? Is that you, Pianchi?
Yeah, well, I called myself muting, but you have to have the cursor on the screen, so I'm sorry.
He's yelling at somebody. It's pretty funny. We didn't hear what it was, though. Anyway, so just to let folks know, Jonathan is on Eastern, 8 o'clock Central Time. On Mondays, and so he'll be back then. And Pianchi, just to let you know, well, I'll make my announcement when we come back. Let me just play a couple things, and we'll be right back. Oh, try again. There it goes. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive, conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now, as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything. Such a busy day. We're having so much fun here. So Jonathan dropped in a bit. Pianki, just to give my big announcement, I found out yesterday, Christina Bob, Trump's attorney, is coming back. And so she will be here Wednesday briefly at 9 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Eastern time. And so that's going to be pretty cool. And so I want to talk to her once again about joining with the Trump campaign. I'm going to get Jonathan for a couple minutes, sort of introduce himself and kind of go from there. But I'm hoping that we can all, you know, wangle a trip down to Mar-a-Lago. You, me, Jonathan, Brianna, Wendy, you know, Josie, we'll get the gang, Derek, and we'll all hop down there and, you know, be a big team. That's one of my ultimate goals here, to start working directly with the campaign. Anyway, we'll see what I can do. I keep trying, and we'll see. But Wednesday is going to be another one of those great opportunities to talk to somebody directly involved with the Trump campaign. So any questions you have or ideas, you know, I might be able to squeeze you in for a minute. She's only got about 20 minutes, so we have to be really quick on time. But in that, things are good. Life is happening. The things are really exciting around here. So, yeah. So you have convention of state stuff you're working on. And I just want to see if...
We're having a assimilated convention there in Virginia. Article from the assimilated convention in Virginia on the three proposals, term limits, limit federal spending, and limiting the federal government from owning land. Right now,
I remember talking about that. That's the one that you said that... Because you mentioned something that the Convention of States has taken up things that we've talked about. We did a two-hour special with Roger Roots on how the federal government cannot own the land they own out west. It's simply unconstitutional. So do you think that kind of filtered in? I mean, who brought it? Is Roger Roots part of this, or did they listen to our show, or how do you think it just, you know, through the ether, the osmosis factor?
They listen to your show in the proposed amendment. The federal government aren't allowed to own no more than 10% of any land within the state, and that's at the bequest of the state legislature.
Well, see, that's not constitutional either. That's not constitutional because they can't declare a certain percentage of land. Let's see what the Constitution says.
It's a constitutional amendment that states that the federal government can't own more than 10% of any state land, and even then it has to be at the bequest of the state legislature.
You see, but that's an increase in land, because what the Constitution says in Article 1, Section 8, very clearly, as I'm trying to turn my pages fast here, it says, there's a necessary and proper clause, to exercise legislation in all cases whatsoever over the district. So the federal government gets the District of Columbia, all right, not exceeding 10 miles square. It gets, it says, and the acceptance of Congress become the seat of the government of the United States. Okay. And to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be. So they can't have any land in a state currently unless they purchase it with the permission of the state legislature. Okay. And then it says, of the state, in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. So the only reason that the federal government can purchase land in the states is for the erection of forts. In other words, you know, defense installations, magazines, that's ammo, arsenals, that's guns, dockyards, that would be, you know, waterfront facilities, both, I would say, river, lake, ocean, and other needful buildings. In other words, offices, you know, within a state that are federal offices. That's it. Why would you give them 10% when the Constitution already says they can only have land for specific purposes? That seems to me giving the federal government even more power, which seems to be opposite of what the convention says.
It's because the state legislature will want to give them 10%. And they wouldn't have any control over the extraction of natural resources or imposing any fees for that particular purpose. So actually,
yeah, but they don't have that now. They take that authority now, but technically they don't have it.
They are doing it. They are doing it now.
Yeah, but the correct response is for the states to take the federal government, which is a mandated Article 3 case directly to the Supreme Court and say, look, the federal government is charging us, you know, royalties and license fees and duties on our own land. They can't do that. That's what they should
do.
Well,
the states want to. That's why these 50 states, 48 states in this simulation, 49 uh-huh. states,
right.
is going through this process.
Okay. Well, it's a good process to go through. What they I mean, there's nothing wrong with the process. But if I was there yeah. as a member, I would be arguing against the amendment because the federal government already has less power. The states have all the power right now to take all their land except for needful buildings, dockyards, arsenal,
you
magazines.
You should have got Florida. You should have got Florida. Got Florida to send you there, then you could argue that.
Nobody asked me about it. I didn't even know about it. You know, I couldn't afford the trip right now anyway. I don't have a travel budget. I can't go anywhere. I'm stuck here. I need sponsors.
Then another point they have is that representatives can only serve nine terms, and senators only three terms. So that was
so that's 18.
Senators,
so,
four terms. Six. 6, 12, 18, 24, representative, 9, yeah, 18, I think it's 18 for the, 9 terms for the representative and, yeah, 3 terms for the U.S. Senate. And
okay,
no
so three
more
terms is,
than if you go from one to the other, no more in 24 years, period. And what was the contention on that? Well, that they want to stipulate that it, which it wasn't, is that that's for future elected positions.
Hmm.
So if a person has already been serving for 40 years, well, you can't kick them out. So it's not de facto. It has to go from this point on. So that's pretty good.
Well, it is and it isn't. I don't believe in term limits because we already have term limits, 2 years for the House, 6 years for the Senate. What would be better, it would be to repeal the – and here's something they could do very simply because there's no language change on it. Just repeal the 17th Amendment and put the election of senators back into the states. Do they have a provision for that? Because that would make more sense.
No. That's what these 49 states are –
Okay.
Proposing.
Right. Yeah. Well, I haven't found one that I support yet. What's the other big one?
China?
I think there was three, right? You got three committees.
Well, the other one is the budget.
Okay. Tell me about the budget.
They're now allowed to spend over the budget. I think it's like 10% maybe, but I think it's changed.
Let's talk about this because this is interesting. So the balanced budget amendments that I have seen, they say we're going to balance the Congress cannot spend more than they take in, except, and here's where the problems come in, except, you know, war, pandemic, national emergency, things like that. And the problem is that the first thing government does is declare a war, a pandemic, and a national emergency. The emergency never ends, and then the budget, the Balanced Budget Act becomes moot. If you'll notice in our constitutional amendment that the Congress cannot borrow money, there are exceptions. The Congress cannot borrow money, period. That's the only way to do it. Because the minute you open the door to exceptions, you'll always have exceptions. You'll never have what you're trying to get. So the Congress will be able to say, "Well, look, we passed your balanced budget amendment. What are you complaining about? Well, you're spending more than you're taking in. Well, we can do that because we have an emergency. You know, I mean, it defeats its purpose. So if they're saying you can spend 10% over the budget, that defeats the purpose." You know, it doesn't make sense. They're going to violate that anyway. Is it an emergency clause in it? Do you remember Mark Thornton? Remember when Mark Thornton was on the show? In fact, I was seeing him play in one of his interviews, but we're not going to have enough time today. Mark Thornton talked about the Weimar Republic in Germany. And the Weimar Republic had a really great constitution with defined rights, and they had all kinds of things. And then they had an escape clause. They had an emergency clause that the constitution could be suspended, revoked, or limited during a national emergency. So what did the government do? They immediately declared a national emergency, suspended the Constitution, and then we got Hitler. Escape clauses are the most dangerous. So tell me, do you have the text of this budget amendment? I'd be really curious to hear it. Do you have it there by chance?
No, unless I went back in the proceeding.
Well, tell me what you remember of it then. you're saying that it has a 10%. So the Congress can they have to have a, it's a balanced budget amendment, right? Is that the title of it?
Yes, for restricting Congress. Yes, yeah, a budget that they can't spend above. It's sort of like the Hancock Amendment in Missouri.
Which is
but
what?
That the state of Missouri legislature can't spend more than its revenue,
okay.
Basically.
Yeah. Well, and that's good, but as long as it doesn't have an escape clause. So if it's like our amendment, in fact, I wish they'd just take our amendment. You know, because our amendment
anything that
actually
comes in above that, they have to give it back to the citizens.
Oh, so extra. So what do you mean? How does that work? Extra revenue comes in?
If a certain percentage of revenue comes in above the expenses, then
right.
It has to go back to the people.
But they're always going to have expenses meet revenue, so that's you know that's kind of interesting.
Otherwise, they're not going to be carrying no surplus, no big
well,
surplus.
Well, it'd be interesting then in that case what they should do is they should set their budget before they find out how much revenue they've got. And if they find that they don't
well,
have enough revenue wait. For the, what? Go ahead.
I think it is, but I'm not so sure.
Okay, well, that's fine. Let me go over – tell me what you think of this one again. So here's our amendment, all right? And I've modified it. I've made it even stronger. So Action Radio is putting forward a constitutional amendment. Congress shall not have the power to borrow money. It says Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution shall be amended by striking Clause 2. And Clause 2 says Congress shall have the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States. So we're striking the part that says to borrow money on the credit of the United States. Then, and here's the good part, Section 8, Clause 1 shall be amended by adding at the end, and Congress shall have no power to borrow money on the credit of the United States, nor to print money to cover expenses, nor authorize the purchase or holding of securities, nor to authorize or permit any central bank, nor to allow any control of money beyond Congress. That gets rid of the Fed. That gets rid
what
of
is that
inflation.
Gonna be is that going to be a constitutional amendment?
Yes.
The law.
Article 1, Section 8. No, it can't. No, it has to be because it's a restriction on Congress, so it has to be a constitutional amendment. It has to be in the
all
Constitution.
All right, now you got to convince.
Uh-huh.
You got to convince 38 states that that's what they want to have.
Yep, you bet. And
so it's not as easy as you make it sound. You may disagree with what these states are coming up with, but
uh-huh.
What you got there, you got to convince 38 states that this is the way to go.
Right, exactly. I agree with you. Now, I didn't say it'd be easy, but our amendment is stronger than any of these other ones. So if this budget act that you have from the Convention of States, if it has an escape clause, it's worthless. If it says that the budget act is suspended or amended or, you know, there's an exception to it or anything that allows the government to borrow money or not stick only to the revenues they take in, it's invalid. It's not going to go. It's worthless. That's my contention.
So this has been going on for 2 days, and today is the last day.
Huh. I'll have to look into it. Or if you want to tell us more Monday, that'd be kind of fun. That'd be kind of good to hear. I was hoping to hear from one of my friends who's heading out to the border, but he didn't call in, so that's not working out. I had some other news. What other news have we got up today? We got about 17 minutes left. We can kind of hash out what's going on. The big news, of course, is Christina Bob's coming back next Wednesday, Trump's attorney. I wrote some things on Facebook. Here's something. I'm curious what you think of this statement. I said, if you can get a political asylum in the U.S., if you are being persecuted solely for your beliefs, then can't the January 6th folks get asylum for being persecuted solely for their beliefs? In other words, can they be released from the D.C. gulag? Can they apply for a political asylum in the United States from the United States government? How's that for a thought?
That's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, these people come here and say, well, I've got political – and these people that are coming here by the millions, they're not here for political asylum. They're just here for money. But real political asylum means you're a political prisoner. You've been persecuted by a government, your own government, for for simply, you know, either disobeying, questioning, disagreeing with, you're made a political prisoner. In other words, you're being made a prisoner for your political beliefs. Well, that's what the January 6th people are in for. So can they not apply for asylum in the United States from the United States government? I mean, is there any law that says that someone applying for asylum can't be applying for asylum from the U.S. government? I don't know if that's ever been done before. It's kind of an interesting concept, though, don't you think?
Yeah, here's the wording on the land. This is Federal Legislative and Executive Jurisdiction Proposal 3, Section 1. Except with the permission of the legislature of the state where the land is located, uh-huh. The national government shall not own, regulate, or control land or mineral rights, nor the proceeds from the sale of the same, except for the purposes expressly enumerated in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17.
Right.
The national government shall not own, regulate, or control more than 10% of the land in any given county or parish, except with the express consent of the legislature of the state in which the land is located.
Huh.
Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2, notwithstanding. And then it goes on to say in Section 3, Congress shall return or cede all remaining lands to the state in which it is located within 10 years from the effective date hereon.
Yes. Why would you wait 10 years? I give them a month.
They
give them 30
days.
They got
to clean up their mess.
Yeah, 10 years? They're never going to go. People will forget. Yeah, a whole different set of employees in 10 years. No, I would give them 30 days, you know, and let them take their stuff out, you know, let the state just take it over, and the state's going to return anything that the feds don't do, and the state can bill the feds for cleaning up. No, 30 days, get out. If you're going to get rid of them, none of this this wimping out is not going to work. Well, that's interesting. Okay, I think the Constitution as it exists is stronger than that. I see no reason to change the Constitution, but I see every reason to enforce it as written. You know, dockyards, arsenals,
well,
magazines,
got,
and municipal buildings.
Well, you got like up in the Willow Oil Project in Alaska, where the federal government stands to make $40 billion off of fees.
Mm-hmm.
That money should go to the state of Alaska, not the federal government.
No, I agree.
And
I mean,
they don't
want to base
the way things are written in.
Yeah. I've actually seen the Alaska pipeline. It's pretty impressive. It's really wild.
That's a new project we're talking about that Biden was talking about. Here's the amendment on the term limits.
Okay.
No person shall be elected to serve in the House of Representatives more than 9 full terms, nor elected or appointed to serve in the Senate more than 3 full terms. This article shall not disqualify.
Mm-hmm.
Any person from completing a term in the Congress to which that person was elected or appointed prior to ratification of this article. Now, the question that came up is that what about somebody like a Biden or a McCain who's already been in here about 40 years? So does that mean that they can be in for a total of 64 years? I'm sorry, 58 years?
That's okay. No, there's probably grandfather clauses. In other words, if you came into office before that, they don't count the time that that you served before the term limits take place. I've heard some varying degrees of term limits. The shortest terms I've heard, one presidential term of 6 years. I've heard three legislative House terms of 2 years, one Senate term of 6 years. That's the shortest I've heard. The middle ground would be two Senate terms of 12 years, and that would be then six two-year terms. You know, for the House, so they get 12 years also. You're talking about three Senate terms, that's 18 years, and nine House terms at 2 years each, also for a total of 18 years. Well, that's as long as most of them serve anyway. So I'm questioning what that's actually going to do, because I don't know what the average term, let's look up the average time somebody serves in Congress and the average time in the Senate. Well, that'd be something interesting to find out. You know,
yeah, Bill Clay served 32 years in Missouri.
Yeah, but that's the exception, though.
His son served 18 years. That's 50 years of one family.
Yeah, I believe it. So what is the average representatives serving Congress? Let's see what the average is. I bet you it's about 18 years or less. The average length of service for representatives at the beginning of the 9 years. 9 years. The average time is 9 years. 11 years in the Senate. So that means they're doing a term in almost two. So you look at two Senate terms, what, 4.5 House terms? So this term limit is already beyond the average that they serve right now anyway. So that's not going to change. For most of them, it won't make a difference. So it's only the longer-term folks that are going to be affected by this. The short-termers will be gone. The average-termers will be gone. Only those that are in there longer than average are going to be affected by this particular law. Seems to me kind of silly. And that's from CRS, Congressional Research Service. This is where the numbers come from. December 14th, 2022, updated. Yeah. Oh, here we go. So membership of the 117th Congress, a profile. The average age of members of the House, you're going to find this interesting, 58.4 years. For the Senate, 64.3 years. The overwhelming majority, 96% of members of Congress, have a college education. Dominant professions, service in politics, business, and law. That makes sense. Most members identify as Christians, except Obama. Teasing. Average length of service, you know, was 9 years. So that's 4.5 House terms and 11 years for Senate. 150 women served in the Congress. 56 African Americans.
No person shall serve in Congress for more than 24 years in total. At the beginning of each presidential term, the president shall be required to fill or refill all offices of the executive branch, the appoint to which is required to be made by the president in accordance with Article 2, Section 2. No person shall serve more than 12 years combined as an officer of the executive branch. Then all officers and employees of the executive branch shall serve at will.
Let's look at Article 2, Section 2. The president shall be commander-in-chief of the Army and the Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states. That's Article 2, Section 2. How does that apply? That's the commander-in-chief clause. So what was that clause again? Oh, Pianki's gone. Oh, no. What do I do for 9 minutes? Article 2, Section 2 is the commander-in-chief clause of the president. How does that apply to what you're talking about?
Well, that article you're reading will probably be lined out. Gone bye-bye.
Okay. Well, it seems like they're quoting the wrong section of the Constitution. I was just curious if they just made a mistake or whether there's a different section. Huh. Anyway, so term limits, what's your feeling on that?
Yeah, that's good. Nine consecutive terms. That's we'll let somebody else come. You can't do it in that length of time. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, and the other question is, why do the voters keep voting them in?
Because they're ignorant.
Yeah, but there's another thing, too. I want to start to write a bill on this. Parties. We don't vote for the candidates of our choice. We vote for the candidates of the Republican and the Democrat Party's choice. They tell us the limited number of people that we can vote for. We can't vote for anybody for president because they don't have the money to run unless they run independently. That generally doesn't work. Ross Perot, John Anderson come to mind as independents. That's about it. So who runs for office? People that the Republican and the Democrat parties tell us will run for office. So the real term, the real limit, you want to put a limit on elections? Get rid of the parties selecting candidates.
Well, that's where the ignorance of the people comes into play.
Okay. But what I'm saying is that for I would rather see a national poll. You know, right down.
We have a national poll on candidates because I don't want Texas telling us in Missouri or in Louisiana what to do, especially California.
That's true, too. Well, or you could break it up by state. In other words, the state electors would vote for, you know, different people. We're just trying to get candidates for the ballot. But there should be some kind of national poll. And we're not, this isn't binding, but just like, let's see who people want for president. So who would you want for president? This would be kind of interesting in our last few minutes this week. Forget the parties. Forget the forget everything. Forget everything. You know, no party, no nothing. Who do you want for president just based on who they are as individuals? And, you know, who would you like to see in the office? Male, female, old, young, doesn't matter. Who would you want for president? In politics or
well,
not?
Well, it should be on the policies, what it should be.
Okay.
And the policies should be a temperature of the public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
so I would like to see maybe Thomas Sowell or Clarence Thomas as president. Thomas Sowell especially because he's a philosopher. I don't know the last time we had a philosopher president. Someone that really understands a bunch of complex issues and is really brilliant. But he's never someone that the Republicans or the Democrats would pick.
Nor is Clarence Thomas something that the public would want.
Huh, yeah. Well, if we did a poll, if we did all the people out there, see, I think Donald Trump is the perfect candidate because he's got private sector experience. He's popular. He's achieved a whole lot. He's rich enough that he can't be bribed. He's strong as hell. He's courageous. He's got, you know, really good qualities. He loves this country. So Trump to me is like the best mix of qualities I've seen for someone who could be president. That's why I vote for him. But he's not. But the Republican Party would never select him or back him, and yet he's, you know, one of our best presidents. But there are other people out there that would be great presidents too. Who are some of those innovative, you know, people that could really do the job that are just brilliant? Victor Davis Hanson might be an interesting president, for example. Who are the fighters out there? Who are the real fighters? You know, Dan Bongino might make a great governor, for example, and then president. We don't know. Candace Owens might be great in office. There's a lot of people out there that are never considered for office that would be extremely good at it. You know, they're brilliant people. I don't know. I just think it'd be interesting to
take
a national
poll. Here
you go with
the physical restraints.
Okay.
Section 2, Congress, whenever 2/3 of both houses of Congress by roll call vote deem is necessary.
Uh-huh.
May exceed the spending limit in section 1 for one fiscal year by borrowing as provided for in the second clause of the 8th section of Article 1 of this Constitution.
Okay, so Article 1, Section 8, let's take a look at it because that's exactly where my bill comes from. Although mine's better than this one. I really believe it. Article 1, Section 8 says, the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties and imposts and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. Okay, so that's what Congress can do. Congress can basically lay and collect taxes and pay for the common defense and general welfare. Congress can borrow money on the credit of the United States. Congress can regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and among the Indian tribes. So these are the duties in Article 1, Section 3, Section 8, excuse me. So your thing, which part of it is it amending?
Here's the rest of it. Taxes levied under the 8th section of Article 1 of this Constitution shall not be raised to increase the revenue of the United States unless 2/3 of both houses of Congress by roll call vote concur.
then nothing in this amendment shall be construed to allow for an increase in taxes without the express approval of Congress. This amendment will become effective 3 years after ratification.
3 years. But they've got that now. Congress can raise or lower taxes now. So if you want two-thirds to raise taxes, that's not a bad idea. The Senate already has that with the cloture vote. Unless it's a reconciliation bill. The Senate, you know, has to have 60%, 60 members. Or 60%, because there's 100 members of the Senate, before they can raise taxes. All tax bills have to originate in the House. So even if the Senate wants to raise taxes, they can't do it unless the House, so there's a restraint. Now, the House can pass it by majority. That would be, you could do that by House rule. You wouldn't have to do that by constitutional amendment. The House could pass a rule and say, we will not pass a budget bill, a tax bill, without, you know, two-thirds majority. See, I think all bills should have a two-thirds majority to pass Congress and four-fifths to override. That's what I do. Interesting, huh? What do you think?
Well, you got a long road ahead.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. Well, let's pick it up Monday. I got a special treat for everybody Monday. There was a Facebook post where I said that all the police, the illegal alien police, you know, you can't do that. And I forgot what I wrote about. Let me see if I can find the quote. Anyway, someone disagreed and said, how come you're using the term illegal alien? You know, immigrants find that term offensive. And it started a firestorm of controversy on my Facebook page. So the guy that posted that, one of my liberal friends, he's going to come on the show Monday. So we're going to talk about that. That's going to be fascinating fun. Then Jonathan, then Dorothy. So Monday's going to be big. Tuesday, we've got Brianna should be back and Josie. Third hour, don't know. And Wednesday, of course, we've got a very special
liberal
guest.
What immigrant would consider that being offensive unless they was in the country illegal?
No, it's, well,
that
exactly.
Don't make any sense.
Well, let me see if I can find the post real quick. I wonder if I wrote
it. I'll see you later.
Today. Oh, don't go away yet. No, I don't have it here. I'll put it up for Monday. In that case, all right. Hey, listen, have a good weekend, and we'll talk Monday.
You too.
All right. Thank
Bye-bye.
You, sir. Bye now. All right, so I'll get the post for Monday. I'll post it on my Facebook page, Greg Penglis' Facebook page. You can find it easily. But we're going to have a good time Monday talking about somebody that wants to say that you can't say illegal alien. Well, of course I can. You know, a bunch of other things, too. And it's like, these people, you know, it's the old argument. These people want a better life, you know, that kind of stuff. So we're going to talk about that Monday. That's going to be fun. And again, Tuesday, I think Brianna's back. And then Wednesday, we got Christina Bob. Thursday, I have no idea. And Friday's kind of crazy anyway. Candace should be back in a couple of weeks too. So everybody's coming back. We're going to have a good time. You know, things are back to normal, pretty much. Let me play a couple more things, and then I'll be back Monday morning, 7 a.m. Central Time, when we will do it all again. Let me see if I can just find my looking for my Strike Force ad. I always like this one because it kind of wakes you up. Here we go. All right, see you all Monday, 7 a.m. Central Time.
This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engine.
And, of course, the other thing you can help out with is sponsoring our show and help us do what we do best.
Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30- and 60-second spots available for your announcements. And we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day.
This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. Here is your Action Radio contact and website information. The call-in line is 215-383-3832. Our show site is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Same link, live and a podcast. Please share all our shows. We have live chat at the bottom of the broadcast page available worldwide. Sign in to your free account and type away. We have an internet Skype line where you can call the show worldwide also. Please see the broadcast page for our Skype name. Call in during the show to get approved. Our bill writing site is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. This is where anyone can write a bill and start the process of it becoming law. My paid and free subscription column is at gregpenglis.substack.com. Please consider a paid subscription of $5 per month or greater. For contributions to Action Radio, please go to givesendgo.com/actionradio. We have over 20 Action Radio Facebook groups. Use the Facebook search window by putting in Action Radio to find our groups. My public email is greg@writeyourlaws.com. Please contact me about advertising on Action Radio and helping our mission of freedom. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.